Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program here in the first hour. Taxes, beggar thy neighbor, economic development, and oh, the grand debate. Also in the second hour, voting, Social Security. We're going to hear a lot tonight about Social Security during the debate, I believe. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And in the third hour, we're going to get reactions from the debate. I got to be honest. I'm anxious to see which Obama shows up. I'm hoping that you see a guy who, like the 2008 election, one of the things that I gave his campaign credit for is he didn't wait. There wasn't weeks to respond. It was immediate. I'm hoping the guy who shows up tonight responds to everything that Romney throws out, every misstate, every falsehood, every made-up little detail, and then throws back at him, says, you know what, hey, remember that 47% comment? Explain that to the seniors who, like my grandmother, don't make enough to pay federal income tax. Explain that to the low-wage worker who's busting their behind to make ends meet. Explain that to them why you don't care. Or so you said. I know you had the epiphany, but you've been around every issue all over the place. And like Huntsman said, you don't know whether he's running for the White House or the Waffle House, which here, again, a recycled comment. George H.W. Bush actually used that exact comment back in 1992 against Bill Clinton, which I thought, wow, hey, I've heard that before. Where did I hear that? But tonight during the debate, there's some things that, you know, we're going to have to remember, some stuff you got to stick in the back of your mind. The more they talk about the deficit, the more they talk about our debt, understand our debt, our deficit, all of that stuff, well, it's the result of the Bush years, the result of those huge tax handouts, the result of, you know, two wars that we didn't bother to pay for. The hope is that Obama says, yeah, look, this is what I inherited. And why you got people like Thomas Sowell running around saying, well, you know, there were more people working when George W. Bush was president. Yeah, when he left as the economy was off the cliff. 900,000 jobs that first month, 800,000 the next month. Of course, we lost millions of jobs because of that policy. And that needs to be brought up, needs to be hammered home. And maybe a little bit of history. Don't know if Obama will go into it, but the reality is when George W. Bush took office, we were looking at surpluses as far as the eye could see. We were looking at paying off our debt. Alan Greenspan was worried, visibly worried in public. I don't know what America is going to look like without a deficit or a debt. What are we going to do? What are we going to do with all of this prosperity when there's no more debt? How are we going to fund our treasury bills? Where are the rich people going to shelter their money? We don't know. Oh, don't worry. The little shrub gave that away. So when you hear Romney bring up the deficit and the debt, remember, we were on path to paying that off. It was policies like his that continued this. Also, when he starts talking about health care, his plan, what he wants to do, are going to leave 72 million people uninsured. 72 million. If they repeal Obamacare, 60 million people are going to remain uninsured. So think long and hard about what he's talking about, what he's saying. And when he starts talking about the six studies that defend his tax plan, remember one of them was a blog. One of them is a blogger, a former Bush advisor who wrote an op-ed. One of them was from the extremely conservative Heritage Foundation. And the rest were blog posts. Those are his credible sources. And while we're going to hear about taxes, while we're going to hear about the deficit, I want to hear about other things. What are their plans on the housing crisis? How are we going to stop the foreclosures from happening? You know, Obama's, you got to be honest, he hasn't done enough. But to be honest, it's better than the Romney plan, which is screw them. Let them get kicked out of their houses. Let people like Romney come in, buy up the properties cheap, and put renters back into those properties. A good business solution. But is that what we as a nation want? Because understand, if we follow that let it all collapse, well, A, that means some of our friends and some of our neighbors and some of our family members who are going to get booted to the curb, but it also means our own property values. If you need that narrow self-interest, if you need the, hey, what about me? The, hey, what about me? Is your property value is going to continue to go down because of those mass foreclosures. The other thing I hope we hear some talk about is breaking up the big banks. I mean, we've seen these banks just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I doubt it. Look, I doubt you're going to hear anything from Romney about holding the banks accountable, considering he wants to undo the very minimal regulation that was able to be passed through Dodd-Frank. We need to be looking at, hey, you know, how do we break these too big to fail banks up? Because too big to fail to me means, well, too big to exist. So how do we do that? Should we be doing it? I don't know that we're going to hear much about it. And, you know, who knows? When you're talking about a town hall meeting, who knows who stands up? You may see, and I'm hoping we see a college kid stand up and go, you know what? I'm saddled with a mass amount of debt. As a nation, students across this country saddled with $1 trillion in loans. Yet, you look at the cuts that have gone on. You look at the cost of tuition that has gone up 600%. And you go, what have we done to this generation? You know, I'm hoping, and I remember the Bush quote, you know, a woman stood up and asked, you know, you cut money to education, you know, how do we make sure that we get education for folks? And he goes, well, we didn't cut education. We reformed it. Which again, anytime I hear that word reform, run. Because reform coming out of a Republican's mouth usually means slash and burn, which usually means you and I are going to end up getting screwed. And pretty much across the board, it's happened. I'd like to hear someone ask about infrastructure. You know, how is it that, you know, like Thomas Friedman said, you know, when he went from Beijing to LAX, it's like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. How's Romney going to pay for it? If we're cutting taxes across the board 20%, if we're making sure that all of the tax handouts for the wealthy are in place and we make sure that we lower those rates, how are you going to pay for infrastructure? How are you going to build the roads and bridges? And oh, by the way, what about the expired farm bill? You know, how are we going to make sure that families still get food on the table? How are we going to pay for the programs that our schools need to make sure that kids get breakfast or lunch? How about mass transit? How about making sure that we can move people around? You know, I don't know if you've noticed, but gas prices are through the roof. How about giving people an alternative? How about investing in Amtrak? How about investing in public transportation? Seems rational to me, doesn't it? Doubt we're going to hear much out of the Romney camp. Obama has tried, but the Jobs Act that he put forth, where he wanted to invest in infrastructure, never passed. So I'm hoping Obama comes up and says, you know what, I'd like my Jobs Act passed. It's pretty comprehensive. It's right there. It's fairly simple to read. Good start. And the other thing, a couple of things. I mean, you look at poverty. You got more than 46 million people, about over 15%. We've heard the Republicans say this time and time again. You know, 15% of our nation is living in poverty, which is true. We've got one of the highest childhood poverty rates in the developed world. How is it that in the richest nation in the world, we have that kind of high poverty? But again, you look at the Ryan budget. You look at what the Republican priorities are. Over 60% of the spending cuts that they propose come off the backs of those least able to shoulder the burden. Much like our governor did here in Pennsylvania. Cut the general assistance budget, gutted education. And then talk about income inequality. And I want Obama to say something about workers having the right to organize. I want him to say, hey, you know what? We should be able to gain some of the wealth that our hands create. It's pretty simple to me. So it'll be interesting to see where this debate takes us. I'm excited to see what goes on, and we'll talk about it. In the third hour, Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News Service will be here. Also, get your thoughts. During the program, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. National Education Association President Dennis Van Roekel sees a big difference between President Obama and Mitt Romney on education.
When he was governor, he cut funds for education. They had teacher layoffs. He raised tuition for colleges and universities. He gave tax breaks to the wealthiest. He supports the Ryan budget, which I mentioned cuts $115 billion for education. He supports vouchers for private schools. He says class size doesn't matter unless you talk about the school where his kids went, where the maximum class size is 11 to 15. For President Obama, from the first day he started campaigning back in 2008, he's talked about education from early childhood to graduate. He raised Pell Grants. He reformed the loan program so money doesn't go to banks. It goes to kids trying to get a college education. He understands the power of education for the individual to follow your dream. For economic development, this country cannot move down the road of economic development if we don't invest in education like the rest of the world.
Two historic Canadian unions will merge into one mega union, Jesse Russell reports.
Vote results released Monday found 90% of delegates voted in favor of merging the Canadian Auto Workers with the Communications, Energy, and Paper Workers Union of Canada. The coming together of the two unions forms the largest private sector labor organization in Canada, with more than 300,000 members. Combined, the new mega union will represent workers in nearly 20 economic sectors. Canada's labor movement is healthier than the U.S. labor movement in terms of population, with 30% of the Canadian workforce represented by a union. In the States, the percentage is closer to 12%. Part of the terms of the merger include an agreement that the words automakers and paper workers wouldn't be in the name of the new organization. It's unknown what the new name of the union will be. That decision, as well as drafting an organizational structure, will be left to a convention planned for early next year.
The AFL-CIO Monday launched a boycott against American Crystal Sugar until the company ends its 14-month-old lockout of 1,300 union workers. Despite record profits, the company chose to lock out its workers rather than negotiate a new labor contract with them. The lockout cut off these families from income and health care benefits. The AFL-CIO says giving workers the shaft while the company is making record profits is wrong. To support the boycott of American Crystal Sugar, go to AFLCIO.org, Stop Crystal Sugar Greed. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So I'm looking at this House Bill 2626, which yesterday passed the House, and pretty substantially with some Democratic votes, as well as most of the, I think all of the Republicans, if I'm not mistaken. Again, another handout. 95% of that personal income tax that we think we're paying to the state to take care of roads and take care of the most vulnerable in the state, they're proposing to give to the employers to do, I don't know what. It's not about job creation. It's not about, well, it's a gift. It's a here. You need a gift. We're going to give it to you. I think it's stupid, which is why I've asked Mike Wood. He is the research director for the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, PennBPC.org, the website. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Michael Wood's name. It'll take you right there. Mike, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, certainly. Glad to be on.
So I'm looking at this 95% of the payroll tax I think I'm paying to the state we're going to be handing off to my employer. Is that the gist of it?
That is the gist of it. This is based on a Kansas bill that is very similar.
And how many states across the country are doing this kind of thing?
Unfortunately, it's more than one would expect. I think there are 16 states that have bills like this or have laws like this. But in Pennsylvania, this would be a new type of tax incentive that we've never seen before.
And this is under the guise of we're going to create jobs, I would assume.
Theoretically, actually, the Kansas bill was more about job piracy than anything else. They were trying to incentivize companies moving into the state, and then if you moved into the state, then you got the credits. A lot of times, in particular, what ended up happening was in Kansas City, Kansas, they had a bunch of employers that moved from Kansas City, Missouri, across the state line into Kansas City, Kansas. People worked at these places, didn't move, you know, just the headquarters moved, and lo and behold, they created new jobs, quote-unquote, in Kansas and got to keep their employees withholding.
That's beautiful. I mean, how do I take advantage of a gig like that? I think what I would really love to see, since we're being business-friendly, and I guess in the state of Pennsylvania we really love this idea, how do I get it that my employee, that my producer, Brett, how do I get it that he pays me to work for me? I mean, because that's basically what we're doing here, right? I mean, you're paying the employer to work for him. How do I get him to pay me more than just the 95% of the payroll tax?
Yeah, I think you're going to need a lobbyist for that.
Or an army of lobbyists. But this is basically what we're talking about. I mean, you're paying the boss to work for him.
Yeah, they, you know, the Kansas bill, you know, had a lot of problems with it. You know, it ended up being amended. You know, that was being the original proposal here in Pennsylvania. It was amended to open it up to all companies because, you know, it's not good enough that it's just companies coming in. We want it to be open to everybody.
Absolutely.
And in doing that, then there was a drafting problem, and it ended up being every new employee hired, whether it's replacing a job or not. Like, you could just have somebody leave a job and then have somebody else come in and, you know, hire a new person to fill that job. You get the credit. And then they realized that would be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes lost. And then it went over to the Senate. They made some changes that scaled it back substantially. But still, it's that same basic idea. You get to pay your employer, you know, that 95% of your taxes go to your employer as a subsidy.
So what is that going to mean? I mean, the reality is each of the last 2 years we've cut $1 billion from education. We haven't invested in roads and bridges, no transportation bill. This past budget, they cut the general assistance budget, basically kicking the 70,000 of the most vulnerable citizens of our Commonwealth right in the backside. Where is this money going to come from, this 95% of the money that was coming in? Because this is a substantial revenue generator, if I'm not mistaken.
The personal income tax is the state's number one revenue source.
So we're giving 95% of that away?
Well, in the bill that was in the House, that would have been the case had it been passed in the Senate that way. It's been scaled back a lot, so it's not going to be – it's down to a $5 million cost, which is still, you know, a lot of money, but certainly a lot better than $100 million or more. But still, you know, these are the kind of – normally these kinds of business changes and things like this, anything that involves the tax code, ends up normally gets taken care of when the budget's negotiated, so you can plan for how much money we have coming in, how much money goes out. Because, you know, you spend $5 million on this program, that's the same as, you know, that $5 million would have normally come into the state and be used, you know, as you said, for, you know, helping fund schools, helping fund healthcare, helping fund environmental protection, and it's not going to be there anymore. So normally you go through a process where you balance this stuff out, try to figure out what you need to do, you know, how you're going to spend whatever's coming in. This is getting pushed through in the legislature. And, you know, it's going to be like, well, you figure it out next year how you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense to me. I mean, the reality being, if you give it to one company, wouldn't another existing company, wouldn't they have a problem? And if, as an employer, wouldn't I just want, you know, I just get rid of my employee and hire someone new so that I can take advantage of that?
Yeah, the way that it was amended in the House before it came over to the Senate, that was the problem. And it ended up being that everybody, you know, it would be like a blank check, honestly, to business for doing what they normally do anyway, which is, you know, obviously not the point of economic development.
Yeah, and another, you know, another handout by you and me to them. And just, again, doesn't make much sense to me. Which, again, you know, you look at all of this money that we're giving these companies in the hope that maybe, possibly, they'll create a couple of jobs. They generally don't. We just usually give them big handouts. I saw this story about Giant, or Ahold, the parent company of Giant, who's building a plant to consolidate their meat cutting from across the region, which means all of the stores across the area are going to probably end up gutting their meat departments. No more people cutting it on site. They'll do it at a central location. They're asking for a big handout, as I see. What's going on with that?
Well, the Ahold situation, I think, is particularly interesting with this and particularly bad example of, you know, corporate subsidies gone awry. They've come to local governments, Lower Allen Township, where the plant's going to be located, West Shore School District, which would be the school district that that would be located in, and also Cumberland County, and said, hey, we're building this plant. We don't really feel like paying taxes for it. Can we get some sort of – we're going to bring a whole bunch of jobs. Can we get a, some sort of tax deal? And, you know, it, from the local government standpoint, they're in a position where it's like, oh, I don't want to be against jobs, so maybe we should give these kind of credits. But, you know, what do you tell the people who have houses in those areas that they pay, you know, they pay their taxes every year for, and, you know, and this one's particularly egregious because it's a facility that, number one, they've already started building. So whether they get the credit or not, they're going to, you know, they're going to build the building. They're doing it for economic reasons on their own part. And we're subsidizing essentially, as you said, you know, firing people making decent wages in local supermarkets across the region, getting rid of those jobs. And replacing them with, you know, lower paid jobs in one facility and, you know.
And probably much worse working conditions as well.
Oh, certainly. You know, and then you see things like, you know, in the news about, you know, these meatpacking plants that, you know, they have, you know, health problems, stuff like that. We don't know what's going to happen with this plant in particular, but when you process a lot of meat in one place, there's a lot of potential for problems to be, you know, if you have problems with one machine or one line or something like that, it can be a big issue, and you could see, you know, giant stores all over the place having problems with their meat because the one place had a problem.
Yeah, and it's that whole centralization like we see with lettuce and salads and all the other stuff when you get, you know, one with E. coli, you know, one place that does it, the whole country suffers from it. And again, I'm not a big fan of the centralization. But, you know, I guess the most obvious glaring thing here is I think Ahold strategically made a huge strategic mistake, because you look at Yingling, the beer manufacturer, the beer people, they're playing it right, I think. Hey, we're going to pit these states against one another and see who comes up with the highest handout, and that's where we're going to go build our new plant. Because that seems to be what we've allowed businesses to do, this whole beggar thy neighbor economic development. Who can we hold hostage for the most money?
Yep, it's a race to the bottom on a lot of these subsidies. You know, we saw it with the cracker plant here in Pennsylvania. It's the same exact sort of thing. And, you know, the thing with Ahold and even like Yingling or the cracker plant is, you know, a lot of these things are close to a state line. Workers work in many states. The benefit from whatever is going to happen is going to happen in many states. Yet one state or one local government or something like that is going to be footing the bill for something that doesn't make any sense.
And you look at the cracker plant. We talked to a guy who not too long ago who said, look, you know, he does site development for companies, and that site was the perfect site. They would have chosen that site probably without a penny of subsidy, much like the site that Ahold chose without getting a penny of subsidy. And we should allow them to do that, but not give them the baby with the bathwater. And I look at, you know, Cumberland County, where I live. My taxes are supposed to go up 22% this year or the next year, and something like 30% in the future. The West Shore School District, they got hit with a huge cut in the funding they get from the state, and now we're giving away more tax dollars.
Yeah, it's crazy. You see some of the, you know, particularly with the county and the school district, you know, the benefit they see from increased, you know, the economy increasing generally comes to the state, comes to those local governments through property tax revenue. If you give that away, what are you getting out of that? It's really hard to see. And at the same time, you know, these companies demand services, like particularly with the meatpacking plant, you know, they're going to be a lot more trucks on the road. They're going to need police protection. They're going to need fire protection. They're going to need, you know, all sorts of amenities, but, you know, they just don't feel like paying for it. And, you know, they've asked to have it waived. Well, you know, that's great if you can get it, but, it's not really any way to pay for government.
Yeah, you know, the thing is we keep hearing from the right that, you know, we need to be more business friendly and we need to get out of the way. And I'm of the mindset, you're right, we need to get out of the way, especially with our checkbook.
Yeah.
Because it seems the only way that they claim that they're going to make any money is off our pockets. And I've seen studies, you know, one of the big outdoor stores, and I don't want to name it, but one of the big outdoor stores, you know, I saw a study that said that's basically their model. They go from area to area, suck up all the subsidies they can get, and that's what they do. That's where they make their big bucks.
You know, and I think that's one of the issues with many of the economic development programs are, you know, the money comes first and then, you know, maybe somebody bothers to study to see what kind of impact there is. And as you said, you know, I think a lot of times these are based on just business decisions that have absolutely nothing to do with what the tax situation is. Yet companies know that they can, push governments into making bad tax deals with them, and everybody else ends up paying the freight.
Yeah, you know, I look at where I live in Carlisle. The Carlisle Tire and Wheel was in that community for 93 years, and the state of Tennessee dangled a couple million dollars in their face, and bang, they were gone.
Yep.
Did we create any new jobs as a nation? No. Had a net loss, and in fact, we as a working class, we as a nation actually got poorer by having this massive redistribution of wealth from local tax bases to these big to these companies.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's this kind of thing just goes on and on and on, and I think people need to wake up and put a stop to it.
How do we stop it, though? You know, I've asked a number of congressmen, can we use the Commerce Clause? Can the federal government step in and say, stop it, enough already? Because somebody has to, because the states, you know, the local politicians aren't going to stop doing it because they like having their big ribbon cutting. They like saying, hey, look, I brought some jobs to the neighborhood, even though it cost my kids, you know, bigger class sizes, and it cost the most vulnerable in the state, well, $200 to keep them alive.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. It's, you know, I think we as voters need to, like, make sure we keep these things in mind when we go to the polls and elect people accordingly. You know, I think one thing that we've seen in some very, you know, in some very specific places is that you've gotten governments getting together and saying, hey, we're not going to compete against each other for these same jobs. But that's very voluntary, and unfortunately, I think that seems like that's more the exception than the rule.
Yeah, I mean, I like what the one guy, we had someone on from the good jobs first. He said what should have to happen is the governor who's gaining the jobs, he should have to go to the state that's losing them and do the ribbon cutting there. As he's being pelted with tomatoes. That would be at least a step towards something.
That is definitely true.
Michael Wood, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and have a wonderful evening.
You too. Great talking with you. Research Director for the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, PennBPC.org, the website. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
As we know, the government can't do anything right. We know this not only because a menagerie of right-wing media yakkers and anti-government politicians ceaselessly bleat this message at us, but also because it's often echoed by such basso profundo media voices as the New York Times. For example, the Times recently went after the U.S. Postal Service, a favorite target of political forces eager to privatize our nation's mail agency. Distress deepening Postal Service defaults, screeched the headline, with the article's opening sentence assailing the hapless agency for sinking deeper into debt, having missed for the second time this year a deadline to pay $5.6 billion for its future retiree health benefits. This reinforced the right-wing claims of gross bureaucratic inefficiencies, suggesting that no private corporation would stay in business if it was so slipshod. But wait, while the Times did the who, what, when, and where part of this story, it conveniently evaded the crucial question of why. The unmentioned truth is that in 2006, the forces of privatization got Congress to shackle our post office to an absurd requirement that it must, by 2015, set aside funds to cover the health benefits of all workers who will retire in the next 75 years. Hello? That includes workers who are not yet born. No corporation could or would shoulder such a crushing burden. Yet our corporatized Congress has piled this multi-billion dollar set-aside on the back of this public service, demanding that the huge sum be paid out of current postal revenues. This is Jim Hightower saying, this Enron accounting in reverse forces the Postal Service's books to look bad when they're not. It's a deliberate effort to bankrupt an invaluable public asset so it can be cannibalized by privateers. That's the big news that the Times missed.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Don, there's a real difference between venture capitalism and vulture capitalism. The fact of the matter is, he's going to have to face up to this at some time or another.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire. Ring of fire.
Well, big news out of Wall Street. Evidently, Citigroup CEO Vikram Pandit abruptly resigned today. He is leaving the top spot there at Citigroup, where he has been since 2008. And over that time, he's pocketed somewhere in the neighborhood of $260 million. And Bloomberg reports that if no alterations are made to Pandit's compensation package, Citigroup's going to have to pay him, would have paid him $261 million since he's become CEO, and his personal compensation, somewhere about $165 million for buying his Old Lane partner, LP hedge fund, back in 2007, which evidently led to him becoming CEO. The bank then shut down the hedge fund that he had, causing a $202 million write-down. That's something you and I paid for. So they paid him $165 million for something they were going to shut down that you and I, well, that we paid for. Now, you think about this whole idea of a meritocracy. We've heard it time and time again. We hear the billionaire class, the Gina Reinhardts of the world saying, well, you know, you poor people, you shouldn't be jealous of millionaires. You should stop drinking and socializing, and you should work harder. And oh, by the way, work for $2 a day. Because we live in a meritocracy, and the harder you work, the more you make, and you know the BS story. If that were true, do you think Vikram Pandit would have taken $261 million while Citigroup lost 88% of its value during his tenure? I mean, and I can't wait to see what his pay package is going to be, what his out-the-door shoot is going to look like. Yeah, I remember when Hope Depot booted their guy. Bob Nardelli was his $210 million they paid him to leave. And you go, am I missing something here? And the truth of the matter is, yeah, we are. We do everything in this country to pander to the 1%, to the wealth class, to these big corporate titans. Make sure that they have all the loopholes and all the tax avoidance measures to make sure that, well, they can pay their CEOs hundreds of millions of dollars for subpar, well, I don't even know, 88% decline in the value of the stock. I don't know if that's subpar. That's much worse than that, but hey, he made out okay. And last night we talked about the loopholes that McDonald's and Burger King and Subway and a lot of these food franchises, these fast food joints are taking advantage of, setting up tax havens in low tax countries. Like Curacao. And you go, man, we've really gone business friendly. And I look at what we were just talking about with Mike Wood. We're going to give 95% of the state payroll tax back to these employers? For what? We're not talking about creating new jobs. Because understand, Ahold opens that plant where they've centralized all their meat cutters. And I feel for the people who are working in stores who have been there for years, who have been cutting my meat locally. they're going to lose their jobs. And those are probably decent paying jobs with decent conditions. You're going to now move that into a factory setting with high-speed lines, and, well, you're going to have to wonder what kind of conditions. And we're going to give them those tax breaks. Because understand the 450 to 800 jobs they claim they're creating, I question how many they're going to lose, how many we're going to, as a nation, the net loss will be. But those 400 to 850, will Ahold be able to keep all of 95% of that income tax that those workers think they're paying to the state? And like we talked about, this is just dumb economic development. This is going to lead to the larger class sizes. This is going to lead to larger deficits. This is going to lead to less help for people with disabilities. This is a screw job top to bottom, but that's really not what it's. It's a handout. It's meant to starve government. It's more of the Grover Norquist starve the beast mentality. And what bothers me, much like the McDonald's and the Burger Kings and the Subways who have set up these tax havens all around the world, we got a tax haven just almost on our border. You know, they're in Delaware. There's a tax haven where more than 70% of the corporations in this state pay no corporate net income tax because there's that magical loophole box over there. But they're still going to get this credit? I mean, does that make any sense to you? And while we think that we're paying this money to the state for vital services that the state is helping local governments pay for, what's going to happen? We know what's going to happen. Our property taxes are going to go up. Our local taxes are going to go up. Or we're going to do without services, or they're going to privatize. And I just saw the headline of the local paper where I live, wage freeze. The only way the county that I live in can balance its budget is they screw their workers. Got to take it out on the workers. And that seems to be the way to go. I mean, you're going to screw the taxpayers. Yeah. Especially the low-income folks and the workers. And the big corporations, the people who historically we've said, you know, if you want to do business in our community, you're going to have to shoulder some of the burden. We've let skate away. I mean, to me, that's a mentality change. The more you talk about this, and my grandparents' generation got it. They understood it. These corporations, while they should be operating at a profit, like Samuel Gompers said, it should be criminal for a corporation not to operate on a profit, but also to pay your fair share. My grandfather's generation understood, you know, these are here not to control us, but to help us, to pay some of the freight, to help pay for the education system that they use, to help pay for the infrastructure that they use, because without that stuff, they don't make a dime. But we've completely lost that idea that these corporations that we've allowed to be created have any responsibility to the society, to the community in which they operate. And that we seem to be okay with this beggar thy neighbor economic development where they're jumping around from state to state, pitting people against one another so that they can extract the largest subsidy. And, you know, I got to be honest. I think about where I grew up in Cleveland, the big card producer, American Greetings, holding not only the state hostage for something like $110 million, but also the little cities, the little townships. And eventually moved out of the city of Brooklyn where I had lived, where they had been for generations, because they got a better tax deal. And you go, what happened to that school district? Well, property taxes went up, a shift in responsibility. And that's all we're seeing. So I agree with the Tea Party. I agree. I'm taxed enough already. I know working people taxed enough already. So when we hear Romney tonight talk about his tax plan, it's more shifting. It's more putting the burden downward. It's more you and me picking up the freight. That's the plan. So when he talks about, well, 20% across the board tax cuts. And like Zandy from Moody said, the math just doesn't add up. He's going to have to alter that. Where do you think he's going to alter it? No, he's going to alter it for you and me. I guarantee you, that 20% across the board tax cut for the top, is really across the board for them. For you and me, it's up for debate. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record-keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
Danley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Danley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Danley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Danley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Danley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Danley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
Oh, yes, we could be the Texas of the Northeast. Yes, yes, we've got a governor who wants to be like Texas, except, you know, the way we tax the people who are drilling all of that gas from out from underneath our feet, nothing like Texas. And I guess the question is, do we want to have the large number of minimum wage jobs? They're one of the top states in the country with the number of minimum wage jobs. Do we want to emulate that? Do we want to have a two-class society, the very, very wealthy and, well, everyone else down at the bottom? Then, yes, we could be the Texas of the Northeast. And last night we talked a little bit about the report put out by the Keystone Research Center on manufacturing jobs, answering the question, you know, which party? Which party is good for manufacturing in this country? And, well, who not so good? So I've asked Colin Gordon, one of the authors of the study, the Manufacturing Job Score 1949 to 2011. He is a senior research consultant with the Iowa Policy Project. Colin, thanks for taking time for me.
A pleasure to be here.
So I guess, you know, the simple question is well, Democrats, Republicans, who's better for manufacturing?
Well, the national numbers make it pretty clear. I mean, if you average across administrations, Democratic administrations since World War II have, on average, created about 1 million manufacturing jobs every 4 years, and Republican administrations have lost 1 million manufacturing jobs every 4 years. So it's a pretty stark difference.
So when I hear Mitt Romney tell me he's the job creator, he knows how to create jobs, that's something that historically Republicans who, you know, I sat last weekend and watched all the debates for the last probably 30 years of the presidential debates, And each one of them, it's the same debate over and over every 4 years. Republicans telling me we're going to create jobs in manufacturing, we're going to bring back manufacturing. Yet, as your report points out, in the seven Democratic administrations, you saw an increase of 7 million manufacturing jobs. In the nine Republican administrations, you saw manufacturing fall by 9 million. I don't know why the future would be any different.
I think you're exactly right. I don't know why the future would be any different either. I think there's a tendency, particularly on the part of the Romney campaign, and it's true of recent Republican campaigns, you know, to hang their hat of job creation on a very thin peg, and that is the notion that tax cuts are going to galvanize new investment and attract it from all over the world.
Does it work? I mean, you know, we've been hearing that if we just give enough to the wealthy, we give enough to these corporations, they'll create jobs. Yet I'm not seeing this job creation, because if tax handouts were the way, the Bush years would have been, you know, just smoking hot. I mean, if tax handouts were the panacea, the Bush years would have been the best on record.
Yeah, and if you go back even a little bit further historically, you know, it's the years in which we had the highest marginal tax rates and the highest corporate tax rates through the 50s and 60s that you see the most impressive growth. There's, clearly no clean relationship between cutting taxes on business and galvanizing job creation.
So, you know, going back to the 50s and 60s, when you had the, you know, especially in the 50s, when you had the top marginal tax rate for the high income folks at 91%, and corporate taxes were considerably higher than they are now, why would the growth have been bigger then? Why would it have been better than it is today when, so what we're told, so many more people have more money in their pocket?
Well, I mean, I think the real lesson is, you know, in historical terms, that growth is simply not that dependent upon tax rate. I mean, you it's pretty clear that high rates don't dampen growth when other factors are in place. And it's pretty clear that tax cuts are not going to create growth out of thin air. When your other policies, your macroeconomic policies, your trade policies, are fighting against job creation.
And the trade thing is, to me, you know, when I hear folks talk about our debt and our deficits, to me, the biggest debt and the biggest deficit that I think we have is our trade deficit. And I always throw out there, the last time we had a trade surplus as a nation was 1975. I mean, we've had a couple with individual countries since, but as a nation, the last time we had a surplus of us selling more to the world than they sold to us was 1975. And, you know, a good number of people in this country weren't even born yet then.
Yeah. And I think, you know, trade is one of those differences between the parties that's a little bit narrower. I mean, certainly, you know, there's recent Democratic administrations, Carter, Clinton, Obama have not been great. Great either.
Fairy tale it used to. Not ready to cry. And this goes on forever. But you heard all that infidelity business?
The Evangelical World magazine reports that D'Souza has been introducing his fellow right-wing activists, a young woman, Denise Odie Joseph II, as his fiancée, even sharing a room with her, while at a conference with Alex McFarland, who interviewed D'Souza when he guest-hosted the Janet Mefford show. You don't want to listen. It's like listening to saw blades going across glass. He told World editor Warren Cole Smith that he had filed for divorce from his wife, Dixie. No, really. But according to court records, he only filed the day Smith spoke to him, and under California law, that starts the clock on a 6-month waiting period for divorce. You just heard what a fierce defender of marriage Dinesh D'Souza is, right? Hypocrites. Liars. You know, Republicans. Oh, we got a million of them. Then there,
Well, I mentioned the Dinesh D'Souza story. Simply because there are other stories that touch upon it. The story comes out of Iowa, as a matter of fact. And it's something that happened on the 7th day of October. On the 7th day of October, it was, what were we calling it? It was the Pulpit Freedom Day, I think, is what the weirdos were referring to it as. Steve Youngblood is the pastor of a church, of City Church. Now, if this story gets much legs, it'll be showing up on South Park, and it'll be City Church, you know, City Grill, City Diner. They serve wonderful city chicken. City Church in Burlington, Iowa. And in the back of City Church in Burlington, Iowa, a Christian establishment, there were flyers that urged voters to, this is according to a Huffington Post story, urged voters to remove Justice David Wiggins, an Iowa judge who had voted to legalize same-sex marriage. According to a report from the Associated Press on September the 30th, a woman attending the church objected to the flyers because she was a member of the church and actually concerned about the body of the church. Objected to flyers on the grounds that it was illegal for tax-exempt organizations to promote political candidates or causes. Which is true. On October 7th, Pulpit Freedom Day, which was the day in which evangelical fundamentalist preachers were supposed to openly violate the law of the United States, therefore violating the strictures of Romans 13:11, which commands Christians to be obedient to the state. Pastor Steve Youngblood, who would, by the way, just noting, dwarf Candy Crowley, thundered from the pulpit, that said after that encounter, I thought I'd like to slap her. Her husband should rise up and correct her for asking the church to follow the law of the United States of America. She needed to be slapped. Hit her again. I can put a little stank on it. The story notes, Pastor Youngblood castigated the woman's stance on gay marriage, saying, "Don't call yourself a Christian and do that. We need to draw a line in the sand. We need to begin to say that at City Church, this is how we're going to be." What makes me madder is that this person's husband won't correct them. I don't like rebellious women. I don't like rebellious men either. They're even worse. If you heard the sermon, I held it up and said, "Here it is, go get it." I'm not going to be bullied. I'm not going to be intimidated. I'm not intentionally breaking the law. Yes, you were. And he meant to, because he was encouraged to. Pulpit Freedom Sunday was actually a criminal conspiracy, because two or more individuals hatched a criminal plan and one or more then took action on it. made what the law calls a substantial step. But that's the way criminals are when they get caught. They lash out, because they tend to be mentally ill, some of them, or sociopathic is what I mean. Well, it's somebody else's fault. It's never the sociopath's fault. You get it? Right. This is, of course, the world they wish to create, in which men may freely slap women, in which women are to remain silent in church, and if they have any questions, ask them of their husbands later when they get home, for it is shameful, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 14, for a woman to speak in church. Mitt Romney's just another word for nothing left to lose. So we find ourselves at the top of the hour, at the close of this Titanic Tuesday filibobster, although God knows we've got a ton more stuff. Your calls are coming up next. Line it up, light it up. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. 877-443-2366 is the number to dial if you needed need the toll-free coverage. We are, I am happy to report, thanks to two individuals, $60 of the way toward Sal's $100 Titanic Tuesday challenge. Thank you very much for getting us 60% of the way. I'm pretty sure we can do the other 40% in the next 2 hours. This is Conversation Radio on America's liberal voice, listener-supported. The Green News Report is next. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Whoa. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Eight minutes past the hour, and I got to tell you, you guys are chomping us a bit. All but one of the lines are lit up. And I want to get to all of them. And as such, I decided not to run the Green News Report until, you know, maybe next hour or something, okay? So with that being the case, enough with the dilly-dallying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello from Montana.
Well, hello, Montana. Are we reaching?
Can you hear me now? It depends on how much Verizon wants to accommodate me tonight, so the call might drop because it's that time of day. What's a gazenta?
Did you never watch the Beverly Hillbillies?
No.
You do your cipherins and your gazentas. Two gazenta four, four gazenta eight, gazenta 16.
Okay, never mind. And I wanted to back up for a minute. It sounded in, I think it was Phillip's email when he was about Nothing Left to Lose, that he was giving Kris Kristofferson credit for those lyrics, and John Cash and Charlie Williams wrote that song. So I just,
Kris Kristofferson wrote that song. Pretty sure.
Okay.
Me and Bobby McGee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Kris Kristofferson.
Well,
almost bet money on it.
Well, you ain't got no money, so this is a moot point. And thanks for bringing up the subject of Peter. All those days of Peter with under the desk with Peter at night, huh?
Oh, you make it sound like it was more fun than it was.
Well, Peter was having fun. Sort of.
Okay, I just did some on-the-fly research. Me and Bobby McGee by Kris Kristofferson and Fred Foster.
Oh.
Okay, just saying.
Okay. Okay, it was Foster that I was giving that needed the accreditation, the credit. It was, yeah, but I didn't think it was totally Chris. Anyway, what am I arguing about this shit for? Anyway, I've been listening to archives because I've been kind of incognito for the last week, and I've heard all the archives, and I wanted to respond to Juanita. Yes, thank you for, I'd forgotten all about those ladybugs, and they weren't the regular red ladybugs. They were the orange ones, Asian lady.
Yep.
Yeah, they were, God, the infestation was awful. Jesus.
Oh, back in the day when we lived way out in the country as compared to where we are now, we had an infestation in a 110-year-old farmhouse.
Uh-huh.
They were everywhere, and they stunk. That was the worst part.
They didn't eat
the wood, or they just stunk.
Yeah, right. That was in Newmarket, Tennessee when I had that infestation. I never had them before. Haven't had them since. Anyway, I just wanted to thank Juanita for remembering that, because she said, I was just thinking about Kate and thought, well, I haven't called in for a while. I'm sorry. And she started talking about the ladybugs. And I thought, oh, my God. Also, I wanted to... Gazanta. That's so funny.
Jethro Bodine was graduated from the sixth grade and could do all his cipherins and his Gazantas.
Okay. I appreciate hearing from new listeners. That's very, very cool. I hope that they understand that when you're talking about money, that you're not just being over dramatic or that it's for personal use or whatever. And now that talk radio is losing its shine, it's most important that we keep going here. And it's really important for folks to know that we're hanging on by a mere thread. This is no joke. We only $40 from the goal tonight.
We just hit it.
Oh my God! Thank you. Because sometimes when we get to that edge, it's like public radio, and I call in last minute just so that the challenge can get met, you know.
Right.
And I'm tired of. I'm a little bit like Kevin. I'm limited here, and I get tired of punching my PayPal button just to meet the goals. So thank you, whoever did that last little shot. That was so important. But we need to keep going, because just the idea of not having the horn, it just
And you know, you remind me of something, Kate. I need clear statements from people, because I'm pretty persnickety. You know this. About trying to protect people's privacy unless they give me express permission to, you know, like you write an email and you mean for it to be read on the air kind of thing. If I want to give people public credit for what they do, and if it is okay with you for me to say, you know, who sent and what, or you know, in whatever method you prefer, please tell me so. So that I can, you know, so that I can name you, because I've had a lot of people say, please, Bob, don't ever mention my name.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been the default position over the years. But if you don't mind me mentioning your name, let me know.
I don't, not at all.
Well, no, I mean not just you, and I mean not just you, but everybody. Okay. Obviously the people who put up the challenges, they've put their name to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By the way, you got a note in from Jim. He says, best wishes to Kate, really, Jim. So.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate hearing Jim's Carolina accent when he says out. I just love listening to Jim talk. And I'm glad that email friendship of his burned down with the lady that got so awful. You don't need people like that in your life. That's why I keep my address book and pencil. if I don't get any response, every once in a while I go through my phone and I think,
oh, that's just great. So yeah, okay. So I'm in pencil. Okay, I understand.
No, actually, you're not in your current address. I was sending something to the wrong address. That you said we haven't had that post office box at your house. You know, I was sent out Agnes or something, and I haven't had that. You said we haven't had that for a couple of years. So I would. Whatever, and I keep meaning to send a check to the PMB because I wanted Wayne to have something in the box, and so I always forget to say hey to him. So is he doing okay, boss man, Wayne?
He is. He is working himself silly. He's got a brand new grandson, so his previous grandson now has a cousin. And he is the doting grandpa, if ever there was one.
Of course he is. Oh, of course he is.
But on top of it all, Wayne right now is in his element. It is a political season, and he's out there. Mm-hmm. He's out there doing God's work, and making sure people, especially folks in organized labor, don't do anything stupid like voting Republican.
Yeah. I thought of him the other day. I drove past one of the union halls here. I don't remember which one it is. And they've got all the Republican lawn signs out in front of it. And I thought, what the hell? So that just confirms one more time this is all circus. It's just bullshit.
Well, it is. And one of the most classic manifestations of that around here, Kate, is the fact that the United Mine Workers of America, who haven't not endorsed the Democratic nominee for president probably for as long as there has been.
5 years.
Yeah, something like that. They have not they have not endorsed either candidate in this election.
We don't see either candidate as understanding the necessity of coal to America's future. Or some such ignorant drivel as that.
But that didn't slow Cecil Clownshoes Robert Roberts down from endorsing Joe Manchin. You know, the ad I talked about last night where he said he'll, you know, he'll, I guess he's threatening to come and shoot anybody that speaks up against coal.
Oh, God, that is so, that is just so, he, there's a place for heaven and for him and people like him, so,
Well, you know, you almost, I mean, I watched that the first time, you almost made me want to buy a dress just so I could pull it up over my head and run around the room.
Honey, I haven't owned a dress in, oh, I don't know. Probably.
I know, but you're the one who brought us that.
And Peter, I mean, Peter and I, that was our favorite thing.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So anyway, and then that one last night, you, pulling the dress up over my head, that was her and the ERA and the women shouldn't vote, and I don't remember who it was or why he was even on air or why you were playing that clip. And then who was that you were... That one you just played?
Oh, Dinesh D'Souza, the one I just read about?
Whoever the hell that is, I don't know. But
He's a right-wing free friend of Ann Coulter, you know.
I have to say no more. I just, that stuff makes me so sad. I feel like we have failed somehow because in the early 70s, clear up until it went to Congress or went to for ratification, so in 1972, we worked so hard to get the ERA passed. It was bloody.
I don't know if you caught this on the archives, Kate, but Bishop Willard Romney's daddy, George, who when he had been governor of Michigan, and he was asked his opinion about it, and he said it's demonic.
Oh yeah. Well, him and, oh, God. Well, it just makes me so sad because I think we who worked so hard failed to keep it going. Something happened between then and 82 they had a 10-year extension for the ratification and it failed. And so after 82, it was just nothing. It was toast. The Supreme Court called it moot and, there you go. So I just feel like sometime in there something happened, and maybe it was Reagan. I don't know. I can't blame him, but we just, if somebody, someplace along the way, we just needed to keep working at it, and we didn't, and whatever. So we still don't have equal rights and whatever.
One of the things that happened alongside it was that it was used, the Equal Rights Amendment, the bigots took hold of it and said, this isn't really about the women's. This is about them homosexuals.
Oh, yeah, we were there, too, but we could have kept fighting. I mean, oh, my God. And whenever I hear that term, bra burning, I just have a white hot rage inside. Nobody burned no freaking bras. That was a advertisement. It was a ploy by Playtex or whoever, and they had that picture of the garbage barrel with the fire in it and people dropping bras in it. Bras were too expensive. If you had to wear them, you didn't burn them, okay? If anybody burned a bra, it's because they didn't really need them, and it was a big show. It was drama. But the bra burning kind of, oh, Jesus, that is so heavily freighted for me, I just can't stand it. Oh, God.
Yeah, we kid and carry on, Kate, but it is so important for people to have access to words that you like what you just spoke, because that has become an embedded myth in the national consciousness, just like all those poor little wiped-out Wall Street millionaires who leapt from their office towers in 1929. It might have happened once, maybe twice, but you know, there was no reign of Wall Street financiers years. Because, you know, because here's the trick. They came out okay.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And some of them were too fat to get out the window anyway. So.
Exactly.
There you go.
And the same thing with bra burning. Bra burning, as is the case with anything touching upon gender issues, bra burning says a lot more about men than it does about women.
Sure.
Or the concept of it does.
Thank you. I didn't even want to bring that up. But anyway, when I look back on those days, I mean, I'm older than Granny T. And I look back on those, I love to hook up with her and talk about criminal justice and shit, you know. She was in Texas and I was in Washington. Oh, my God. What a field for women to be in. It was wonderful. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out and say that I think that I don't know what happened, but we didn't come very far. And oh, and yes, I wanted to also mention this election. We are bought and paid for here in Montana. There will be no election. It will be whoever spends the most money. I'm seriously concerned about John Tester winning the Senate back. I don't know. It's going to be tough because the ads that are coming out that I see once in a while, they're I don't know which ones to believe, and So we're back to where we were in 08. I'm not even going to bring it up because I sat in a little old house in Alabama arguing till my face turned blue. This will not make a difference. He's an empty suit. He's a Chicago politician, and he's good slick talking. Oh God, he's slick talking, and I guess he's good looking. I don't know. And this is not going to make any difference. It's not going to make any difference.
You cannot have wholesale changes in Empire, Kate.
We are toast. It's the end is here, and not in the Christian sense. There's no place else to go. There's no water to drink. There's no air to breathe. And we've used our resources, and we've hit the edge. We've hit the cusp. And this is just best we can do is make the best of the day and keep watching the pageants and saying, ooh, ooh, ooh. And I happened to be in a place where I could watch a little bit of TV the other day, and I happened to be on TLC, and oh my God, that Honey Boo Boo.
You saw Honey Boo Boo.
That is so sad. I was just heartbroken. I mean, that's child abuse. It's exploiting poverty.
Yeah, the neologism that was coined for it, Kate, is poor sploitation.
Oh, well.
And that's and it is exactly what you said it is. The latest round in that is that Rosie O'Donnell has offered to buy them a new house. And they said, no, thank you. We like where we live, but we wouldn't mind a little renovating and an extra bedroom.
Well, I understand that.
I do, too.
Why would you want a new house when you've lived in this one for so long and you have to pay taxes on a new one and shit? You know, why would you just, yeah. God. Well, I mean, I assumed was the mother and the child that I looked at that and I thought, holy shit. Oh my God. And this is and I just shut it off. It was so sad to me. I can't stand when people are abused that way. It was almost like making fun of mental illness. And,
Well, it sure is.
And I just felt so much compassion for them that it was just very sad to me. I just don't know. So anyway, well, I just think that our elections are going to be, I don't even want to start because I'll piss off half of the audience and the other half will hang up and go away and don't listen to me. Just send money. I had this big argument with you two a long time ago back in 08, and it was just, and I just kind of roll my eyes and say, see, why is everybody disappointed? Oh my God, why is everybody disappointed? Ooh. So.
I wasn't one of those who was laboring under the impression that this was the second coming of FDR.
No, I know you weren't.
Among other things, I knew about him swanning around southern Illinois and northern West Virginia and western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio with coal executives in tow, talking about us being the Saudi Arabia of coal.
Mm-hmm.
That told me a lot about all I needed to know about him, his liberal street cred.
And my arguments always got shut down by, well, he'll be better than McCain. Well, okay, can't argue with that, cowboy.
Right, just like you can't argue with the fact that he'd be better than Bishop Willard.
No, right. So anyway,
yeah, so you know, come today. I'm gonna go toddling down. And I'm gonna go cast my vote, understanding precisely what it means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not a vote for change. This is a vote for not getting any worse than it already is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not necessarily a vote for getting better.
Mm-mm. I have a question about the baptizing thing.
The
baptizing?
And how people
get upset about that. If I don't believe in heaven, hell, God, devil, all that shit, why does it matter if some maniac cult goes off and baptizes my grandma? I mean, it doesn't make any difference because they're not doing anything. It's just like breathing, you know.
I don't want to get overtly graphic, but I'm kind of gonna anyway. It matters for the same reason as it would matter if, let's say, you've got Granny laid out for her funeral.
Right.
And everybody's outside the room, and then, you know, you lead the mourners in, and you find some guy up there behind her going to town.
Well, okay.
It don't matter to Granny. Granny's dead.
Right.
But it is horribly shocking to those who have lived on to witness it, Kate. And I don't believe so much as an iota or a scintilla of the lunacy that passes for Mormonism. I think it is laughably stupid. But from things like dead baptizing come things like the rewriting of histories. As someone noted, consider if the Mormons can dead baptize enough Holocaust victims, how far are they from claiming that Mormons were persecuted in the Holocaust?
And I don't know.
And at that point, that becomes a necrophilia not just of an individual, but of an entire history. And when you do that to history, you're doing that to humanity.
Yeah.
So I mean that's I'm horrified by it because somebody loved that dead person, and even if I don't share their faith, for instance, I can still feel that sixth sense of shock and disgust, because it isn't just a matter of some lunatic cult doing its lunatic cult thing. It is a violation of the individual and the family of the individual and the progeny of the individual. And it's also an overt manifestation, I think, of a sort of a sick sense of religious privilege. They can do anything they want to because they're a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gets me sideways.
Speaking of religion, there's a woman here at my apartment building has a New Yorker subscription, and she brings her New Yorkers down to me, and that's one of the benefits of living in the community. I get free New Yorker. I read an article on Brian Fisher. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. The American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi.
Oh, my God. Oh.
I had no idea. I got to go find that.
Oh, I don't even know what.
Did they do, like, deep background stuff? And?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
And it's even creepier than I thought, huh?
Oh, he's awful. I'm wondering. I just wonder why nobody's taken him out. I probably shouldn't say that on air, but whatever.
Because the ones who would are the ones who have the guns, and the ones who have the guns are on his side. That and the fact that our side tends not to do that kind of stuff.
I know. That's it. That sometimes that just pisses me off. That's why I sit at home. And when I listen to you and Malloy, I sit here and then I back to back, and then I get ready to turn in, and I think all the people you're talking about, and they're out there. They're outside my door. They're out there next door to me. They're in rooms where I attend meetings. They're at the VA. They're everywhere. And I think I don't even know who to talk to anymore because the woman down the hall is a birther, and I didn't know it. I've been here 2 years, and I didn't know it until one day in the hallway we were talking, and I went, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So I don't even go out and talk. I just don't go out of my apartment. I just sit here, you know. And it's getting time to, I'm getting white line fever, and it's getting time to get on the road, but I'm thinking I'm probably not going to get back to the Smokies this year because of, you know, finances. My truck is kind of getting tired, and so am I. And I'm thinking, well, if there's any kind of volunteer work to do, any, you know, that I probably should be doing it here at home and not driving 2,500 miles to go work in a RAM clinic, you know. So
right.
I'm probably not going to be coming east this time, and that just breaks my heart because I want to be just on the road again. But oh well, I guess you got to stop somewhere, huh? As long as it's not against a brick wall.
Yeah, that sudden stop can be a bit of a booger.
Yeah, that's a bitch. That's, you know, right? At 60 miles an hour, yeah. Anyway, well, you said the lines were stacked up, and
well, I did want to let you know you got fan mail in. Isaac just wrote in and said, "I love this caller. Keep her on." So, but
he doesn't. Thank you, Isaac. And I really appreciate all the new emailers and the new callers so much, because we were getting kind of ho-hum, you know, like some people I would roll my eyes and think, oh dear, okay, never mind. Oh, well, I mean, there's always something interesting to say, but it's good to hear new voices and hear new emailers and get new contributions.
Now you know you are an icon around here, Kate. You got to be careful because you're liable to have you're liable to have people out there wondering, am I the one that she rolled her eyes at?
Probably. If you've got the question, you've got the answer, honey. No, I don't intend to be iconic. I just have a big mouth and a big concern for the horn, because we've been here a long time, and God, we've been through so much. never mind. Anyway, we can go into archival information, but that, you know, we want new people. So anyway, keep that money coming in. We got another week to go. This is not the end of October. It's only that we've got the money for today.
Right.
This week, right.
We've drawn even with where we need to be for the middle of the month.
Well, it's the 15th or something, isn't it? The 15th, 16th?
Yeah, this is the 16th. This is the middle of the month.
Okay, we've got two more weeks to go, so we're
right. So we've got $100 a show to raise. It's one of those things, Kate, where you can't say. I mean, if you look out the road and say we've got to raise $100 a show for every show that happens for as long as there's the horn.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make it.
Well,
all you can do is one day at a time.
Yeah, keep passing the hat. Keep passing the bucket. Say the rent's not paid yet, so you need to keep apprising people of.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did the math, but I'm not going to say, hey, we got to raise $1,000 tonight. But,
no,
you know,
no,
basically bills fall at either the end / first of the month or the middle of the month.
Right.
And here at the here at the middle
and power.
Yeah, here at the middle of the month, we're looking at water and power, and we're looking at somewhere around $1,000.
Right.
And so, you know, I pay them as the funds come in, I pay the money out.
Right.
And that's how it works.
With your gallbladder, that kind of stress is no way to live. I know.
Well, yeah, this is not a plea for sympathy.
Not.
You know that. But at some point in time, if we can make, you know, the little sticks fall in the Tao Te Ching the way they need to fall, or, you know, whatever, this thing's coming out, which means my butt is going to be away from the microphone for a few days, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just guessing. The surgeon will say that sitting up for, you know, 6 or 8 hours at a time immediately after surgery is not a good idea.
Contraindicated, yeah.
So however long I'm gone is going to mean that the horn is going to probably become financially destitute, which means shit's going to get turned off, which scares the daylights out of me because, you know, they turn you off. They don't want to turn you back on without, you know, we're going to need a $200 reconnect fee.
Or a $1,000 deposit.
Right. And what happens then?
God. Well.
Because I don't, you know, bless his heart, John Fox has been really, really kind to step in and fill in. But he's reached a point in his world where he's out there working every day, trying to keep it together. And wonderful that he is. But there's really nobody I can call on to say, hey, will you do the show for a few days while the skin comes back together?
Right.
So it means I'm Peter? Gone and it's reruns.
What about Peter? Is he still wired?
No.
Oh.
No, I mean, there's no one.
Okay.
That's why it used to be so frustrating when I'd get those emails saying, well, what do you think, you're so special? Why don't you just turn the mic over to somebody else? I'm sure they'd be happy to do it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, the phone system is wired into this studio.
Right, okay.
If somebody hosts, it's because there's somebody...
Oh, right, because when Peter was on, you had to be in the studio to relay the program.
Right, and John would do it and use Skype, but that's only one line at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes it kind of hard to flow that way.
Yeah, yeah. Peter and I never did figure out. He wanted me to co-host the show with him I didn't want to move to Tallahassee. Anyway, never mind. Oh, the good old days. And if somebody go to Peter's, they're in the archives on White Rose, I think he still has them up.
Oh, yeah, they're still up. They're still up.
Yeah,
and some of the best fun I ever had behind a microphone, I think the horn section archives are still up too.
Oh my God, yeah.
And that was a nice little run. Me, John Fox, and Peter just riffing for an hour between the end of my show and the
Yeah, that was good stuff. Good stuff. It'd be a shame to lose any of this, and so. I would just entreat the new listeners one more time, if you haven't contributed, please do. And maybe we can get a build-up. If we knew when you were going to go in for surgery, maybe we could get a build-up to get ahead of the power bill or ahead of the water bill or the Internet, and then you wouldn't get disconnected.
Yeah, you'd have a little cushion.
Yeah, if we had a date and we knew approximately how long you were going to be off air, then maybe we could rally... You know, we could rally around and get that little buffer built up.
Well, and I don't think he's going to look at me tomorrow and say, let's go day after tomorrow. Because we're going to have to go to the financial office and bow and scrape and give DNA samples and last known whereabouts and probably surrender passports and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right.
If they decide that we're finally poor enough again to get some level of subsidization.
Mhm. Mhm. Well,
I mean, it's a brutal country. It just is.
It is.
And it's like what Beth wrote in last night, talking about in Texas, you basically can't get it unless you are very, very old and very sick, or very, very young and very sick, and that even prenatal coverage for mothers cuts off 2 weeks after the birth, postpartum problems or not.
Right. Right.
It's the greatest country in America, Kate.
We have the best health care. I have a 93-year-old neighbor who was bleeding, and nobody could figure out where. We kind of knew where, but she had to go to the hospital, and they kept her in the hospital for 10 days. Couldn't find where the blood was coming from. rectal or vaginal. And I said, what? Are you kidding me? And she had 2 units of blood, 3 or 4 specialists. Her kidneys failed, and then they brought them back, and the yana. I bet you her bill is going to be like $150,000.
I wouldn't, if it's not more.
If somebody said, why are they keeping Betty in the hospital? And I said, because she's got good insurance.
She's getting a radical coverageectomy.
Mm-hmm.
I will never forget. It's a sad thing, but, I mean, enough time has passed that I just talk about it, Kate. My mother was 72 years old, 71 years old.
Mm. Right, right.
Went in for a splenectomy in November.
Mm-hmm.
Died the following June, never saw the doors outside the hospital, and it was interesting that they came to my father and me after they had exceeded Medicare's $1 million coverage limit, and said, you know, it's time for you two to stop playing God.
Mm-hmm.
You got to let her go.
Yep.
And the only thing in the world that doc had best be glad I didn't let go of was my father, because he was,
mm-hmm.
you know, that because that old right. that old salt may have been 73 years old, but he was ready to do some damage. Yeah.
Oh my
Run up the skull and crossbones, boy. We're broadsiding. Ramming speed.
Your dad was a card. Every time I see company license frames on the back of a car, I think of Kenneth, and I think, oh, man.
You get that thing off there. You didn't pay me to advertise your car lot.
Yeah.
I mean, why do people, I used to think he was just being cranky. He's like, oh, come on, Dad, this is a little embarrassing. But you get a little older, and you think, Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Because that was my dad's money he was spending, and he was spending, you know, he was, and you know, and the interest for the note and everything, and they want him to drive around with a badge on the back of his car saying where he bought the damn thing.
Like, that's like the license frames that say once a Marine, always a Marine, or my son is in the, you know, I think, oh, there's another Republican going down the road.
Right.
You know, I just,
right. But with these car lot things, I mean, I'll never forget when I was old enough to appreciate what was going on, when he looked at him and said, and before I drive that thing off the lot, get your name off the back of my new car.
I remember that.
What? And he said, get your name off the back of my car. He said, well, we just put that on it. I don't care what you did. Now, if you want to go in and redo the papers, and I'm going to own this car for 5 years. If you want to go in and redo the papers and take $1,000 off per year for the next, take $5,000 off as an advertising fee, you can keep it on there. But otherwise, take the damn thing off. The next two words were, yes, sir.
Yeah, he was a card. Oh, God. Anyway, well, bless his heart. Okay, other good news. I got word from Mississippi that Isaac didn't do, Ivan? What was the last name?
Isaac.
Ike was just a few years ago. It wasn't so bad, but there was, you know, there was flooding and all that stuff. It was awful. But she didn't call me back to come down, because I called right away and said, if you want somebody to do your paperwork, because I know you do a shitty job on your paperwork for the FEMA. I said, I do good paperwork. She said, yes, ma'am, you do. But they never did call back. So, it was probably a good thing.
Could have been worse.
I'm here with my little 93-year-old who I'm kind of waiting on her to leave.
Well, I think the universe maybe knows you need to be there.
Yeah, like, remember Georgia used to say, oh, honey, you just sit. I said, but I should be up doing something. She said, you just keep doing this respite, darling, because pretty soon you're going to get called to do something, and you're going to get all tired in a hurry, so you just sit there and rest. And so I'm sitting here reading and resting and listening to Korn and the Molloy Show. And okay, so anyway, thank you all new callers and new listeners, and really appreciate you, your breath of fresh air, and all we've had smoke in the air here we got 60 mile an hour winds today though, so the smoke's all gone, but it's, big winter storm, and we got some snow up in the mountains, and yay, it's October.
Just by the way, I got to tell you before you go, Kate, we just got another contribution in, and the message just says, from not too far from Granny T, signed Underdog.
Okay, thank you.
That's
thank
nice.
Thank you. Yes, it is. Oh, my God. I don't know. What, oh, she's over by...
Now, wait. She doesn't like to put it out. Yeah, we just say West Tennessee.
I thought she said one night.
She did. Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay, but doesn't like it put out. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Sorry, Granny. Sorry. Yeah, West Tennessee. Pretty country.
Yes, it is.
It ain't the Smokies. It's pretty.
It's pretty country with some just mind-boggling Indian Mound complexes.
Oh, my, yes, and that river. Anyway, and the pyramid in Memphis.
Here, here.
Okay.
Kate, have a good night, dear. So good to hear from you.
Thank you, darling. Agnes is still hanging around there. Turn around and give her a hug, okay?
Well, she's not, but I will when she comes in. Bless her heart. She's been keeping me well stocked in hot tea.
Okay. Yeah, she's hovering. I know she is.
Yes, she does.
She's on full battle mode, right?
Yep.
I know that.
Sweat
feeling.
Condition all alpha. Right.
Yeah. All righty then. Good night, y'all.
All right.
Take care.
See you, Kate. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Kate from the Front Range. We don't hear from her a lot, but she packs a wallop into a call. Onward we go. Oh, by the way, Tracy, lady cab driver. You know her in the chat room and from her calls. She wrote in, you can say my name. As much as I run my mouth on your show, it's the least I can do. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much. Let us continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
Speak the devil's name in David.
Oh, Jesus. Beetlejuice.
Oh, my God.
And
oh,
Tracy.
God. Hey, honey. You know, I'm listening to what you were saying about your mom at about how long she was in the hospital before she passed. And it makes me think of my sabbatical when I was in the hospital, because I was in the hospital. They were trying to keep me. And me being as ornery as I am, and, you know, motherfuckers coming in and waking you up every 2 hours.
Yeah.
Once you get to sleep. And I'm like, so when they said, well, Miss Porter, we really think we should keep you another day. And I said, well, okay, so tell me what you're going to do for me that my mother, who is an RN, cannot do for me at home. Do I need any more injections? Do I need any more IV? What are you going to do? Is my surgeon going to have to open me back up? Is there anything that cannot be done for me at home that you need me to stay here for? I might took you too long to answer. I'm out.
Get my clothes.
I'm out. Because, see, like your mom, I have Medi-Medi. And for those of you who don't know, you know, I live in the great state of California. See, Bob, you need to come on out here to California.
Well, I mean, we got to sort out what the universe is saying to me with me having these Los Angeles dreams, Tracy. I don't know what that means.
I mean, I know your gallbladder is going to be removed and all that, but...
Well, that ain't no sure thing yet.
I swear to God, I was thinking about you today when I had a deep-fried shrimp taco.
Damn you.
I love you.
Oh.
I'm telling you. because all these... Hopefully, they won't remove your gallbladder, because my mom had her gallbladder removed. And she still eats fried food, but she pays a dear price for it.
That's what everybody tells me. You know,
She eats it, you know, because I took her to have the, you know, because I forgot that she had her gallbladder removed.
So a deep-fried shrimp taco, Tracy, is that like battered or something? Or
No. So they take the shrimp, okay?
Yeah.
And they put it in the tortilla.
Yeah.
And they fry the shrimp inside the tortilla.
So it's a soft tortilla.
Yeah, it's a soft tortilla. And then they deep fry the tortilla with the shrimp in it. And then they cover it with salsa on this homemade salsa and like basically a half an avocado. The price just went up. I hate to say it, they were $1.50. Now they're $1.75.
Now you're just being spiteful.
Yeah, I am. Because, see, I'm thinking, when I'm listening to...
You know, I can't get it. You know, I can't get a double cheeseburger at Wendy's for $1.75?
No, you cannot.
Nobody can.
No, you cannot. Nobody can. But there is a place by my house,
so
guys.
$3, and I'm a happy camper by the shrimp taco
camper.
Truck.
Yeah, and see, and plus they bring the sodas from Mexico with all the sugar in it.
Oh, yeah. What are those? Jarritos?
Yes. And plus the Mexican version of Coke and 7-Up.
Oh, no. See, we've got the Mexican Coke in my local Kroger. See how I work in the product placement? I'd be so good at this. We got the Mexican Coke. But the funny thing is, they even segregate the Mexican Coke. It's not in the soft drinks aisle. It's over by the Campbell's soup.
Oh, ours is in the international food section.
Well, we don't really have much of one of those.
No,
but it's $1 a bottle. I can't have one but once every blue moon or so. But you know, when I absolutely when it is just on me that I must have a Cuba Libre.
Oh yes,
Mexican Coke.
Have the Mexican Coke.
Wedge of lime.
Yes.
And if I could get Havana Club rum, but of course I can't, you know, because
of the
stupid embargo.
I have the Haitian rum that you told me about.
Barbancourt?
Yes.
Pretty special?
It's very damn special. And my friends, I'm not a big drinker, but I drink good stuff when I do drink.
Well, that's kind of where I am. You know, I don't want to sit down and drink 19 beers.
No,
but if I have one beer, I want it to be a good one.
Exactly.
And that means German.
I have a liquor cabinet, basically. And I have the good stuff in that liquor cabinet, you know, Hennessy, Kvassi, you know, VSOP stuff.
Right.
And, you know, so when people, you know, do come over and they say, but you don't drink. I said, no. But when I do drink, I don't want will. Like you were talking about the alcoholic that goes from Jack Daniels to
Mad Dog to rubbing alcohol.
To rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, I thought that was so apt when Paul brought that up, Tracy, because that really is true. I mean, did you catch that story? We are literally feeding our cattle candy.
Candy. Well, look at Honey Boo Boo. I can't call the girl cattle, can I? But I could call her Mammy Cattle. See, when I say mammy, I mean it in the derogatory, because I'm sorry, that is not a mother. That is not somebody who is lovingly taking care of their child and looking out for the well-being of their child, okay? I am a single mother. My son is grown, but I'm still, you know, I still get that phone call. Mom, I'm like, fine, son, no problem. As a matter of fact, the $40 that I sent you was the $40 that he just paid me back.
Oh, bless your heart.
But the thing is, even I was struggling. I mean, dating, going out with men that I didn't like, but I knew I was going to get a good lunch or dinner out of that date to bring home leftovers to my child. Mothers do things that they have to, that they don't necessarily want to do to take care of their children. Sacrificing, going without. I mean, I know I did plenty of time. But to have that fat cow exploit that child the way she is, and then to have these TV executives.
That's where my problem is. It's not, there's exploitation all the way down the hill, but rolls downhill.
Let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
The shit rolls down the hill.
Right. And it starts with those parasitic TLC TV executives who say, "Hey, have we got a redneck women reality show centering around?" No, we don't. We got to meet that demographic. We can sell them some shit.
We got to make it happen. And I sat there once and watched because I had never heard. Blessedly so. Until about a month or two ago, because I keep my mind pretty much set on Jesus. No, I try to keep my mind away from stuff like that, because I am still recovering from surgery, and my head can only take so much before it might explode. And so somehow there was, my television was on Entertainment Tonight or something, which made me sick, even sicker, and I saw this clip about Honey Boo Boo, and they're just laughing. The report, the people who, and I use the term loosely, in, you know, infotainment, and to say, you know, Honey Boo Boo. And I'm sitting there like, what's a Honey Boo Boo, child? And then they're going on and on, and they talk about the go-go juice of the Mountain Dew and Red Bull. That's what they get the little girl.
Right, yeah, like, yeah. Oh, that's her invention. And you know, Dr. Drew drank some on TV, or maybe it was Dr. Phil or Dr. Fool or, you know, one of those babblers.
Dr. Sham.
Yeah, Dr. Sham. That's perfect.
Dr. Sham.
But see, Tracy, all I can do is and this is not to say that I'm better or worse than anybody. I'm just me.
No.
But I can remember when Ferg was considerably younger than he is now. He's, you know, becoming a young man now. But he'd say, yeah, Dad, I want one of those Monster Energy drinks. And I said, son, I want for you not to have one of those Monster Energy drinks. And we'd go round and round, and I'd sit there and explain to him, this shit is not good for you. You have boundless energy as it is. And one time, you know, he got out from school early or something, walked over to the convenience store and got himself one and said, Dad, I don't want that anymore. I feel terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess for some people, I mean, can you imagine giving that to a five-year-old, Tracy?
Look, I barely drink coffee, okay? I'll drink every so often. Fortunately, bless it, because I'm in a relationship. I am now officially a two-income person, family. I've never been a two-income family. It's fine.
Bless your heart.
I didn't know what it was. Bob, I'm 46 years old. I never expected that I would ever be a part of a two-income family. I like it. I like it a lot because it affords for me to do things that I would not otherwise be able to do. Contribute to you. Help my son. Contribute to Emily's list, you know, nominee for, you know, people running for office. It affords me to do the things that I could not do otherwise. And I thank God I'm in a two-income family at this time, because if Mittens win, we're going to need two incomes. It troubles me. And I think about all the sacrifices that I did for my son, and I think about the fact that no matter what I'm one of those mothers that I can look at you and the conversation is over. When I say no, that's it. And if you try to say it again, I'm just going to look at you. And that's it. So fortunately, I never had to have the conversation with Alex about, you know, Red Bull, because he was a teenager when Red Bull started hitting, you know, hit the mainstream. Fortunately, he knows me well enough to not have even asked me if I would give him a Red Bull. It didn't even come into our conversation. Now, being a teenager, I'm pretty sure him and his homies or whatever at school or what have you, they had Red Bull, but he never brought it home around me because he knew that I would kill him because the stuff is poison.
Just on a general basis, I don't get it. I mean, I touched my finger to some and put on my tongue once, and it's just this nasty.
Nasty. It's
nasty.
But my personal favorite are my friends who do the Red Bull and vodka.
Yeah, that's one I really don't get.
Even the
master marketers of that Budweiser pulled their alcohol and caffeine canned beverage off the shelves as a bust. But I remember years and years ago the experts saying, if you've got somebody who's badly intoxicated, don't give them coffee. All you get is a wide awake drunk.
Right. Hello? I mean, it's just the level of insanity, it reaches to, and I'm going to do the segue, the level of insanity reaches to the level of insanity of the right wingers who kept saying that Joe Biden was being mean to Congressman Ryan, and that.
Oh my God! Did you see that photograph of him washing dishes? I mean, Eddie Munster, no. Paul Ryan.
Oh my God!
He busted into a his entourage. Busted into a soup kitchen that was already closed.
No.
So they could have a photo opportunity of him washing dishes in the soup kitchen.
No.
And so there's a picture of Paul Ryan with an immaculate white apron on that has not got so much as a damn drop of water on it, holding the spray nozzle on the long gooseneck hose. Like in a restaurant kitchen, yeah, spraying off a dish. The dishes were already clean.
Already done. Well, it's kind of like how Joe Biden cleans his clock during that debate. I mean, I swore that I was not going to watch it. I was not going to watch it. But just so happens my girlfriend was watching it, and basically Joe Biden, it took everything that Joe Biden had at the bitch slap him and call him a fucking liar. And
well, did you catch Joe almost call him a liar?
Yeah, it took, what did he call it? Tomfoolery?
No. It was before the malarkey comment. It transpired somewhat like this. Martha Raddysh had remonstrated with Joe, and Joe said, "Well, this would be a lot easier if he'd quit."
Yeah.
If he would use more candor.
What I love, see, this is why to tell you the honest to goodness truth, I never really paid much attention to Joe other than when he would say something like he was sarcastic or something, whatever. I loved him for that. But when I heard his speech at the Democratic National Convention, I have never heard a man speak with such
conviction.
Thank you. And so much love for this country. And so much love because he's like, I know the stories of these people. I live this story. My parents are these people, the people that I grew up with. And how is it that you don't love this? I mean, he loves this country to the very fiber of his being. He loves this country. And when somebody like Joe Biden is like sitting across the table from somebody like, Ryan, he's like, I could see his insides gurgling and everything that he has to keep it out, whatever. I bet you he didn't even eat lunch or dinner before the debate. Because had he eaten, he would have...
Exactly, Tracy. All those right-wingers saying, well, he laughed and interrupted 82 times. Well, you little piss ants better be grateful he did, because otherwise he would have been across the table with his hands around Lion Ryan's neck.
Neck. Because
I would have been. Anybody who does not have the professional training of the political class would have been across the table.
Oh, I would have caught another case. I would have caught another case for battery because I would have bitch slapped it. Because it's like, and I would have just, you are, because it took him to say, when he said, who do you trust? Whenever he would, because what I liked about Joe, every lie that Ryan lied, he countered it with a fact. And whenever he asked a question, he's like, okay, well, tell me what you trust. Oh, we can't disclose that and blah. Disclose what? You ain't got shit to disclose.
It's a secret.
It's a secret. It's a secret lie. It's a lie by omission. Because, they say, well, you can't say we're lying if we don't tell you. I said, well, a lie by omission is even worse. Because you're doing your best to hide the lie. I'd rather you just lie to my face. Kind of like my dad lied to my mother and said that he had the mumps and he was sterile.
Huh?
And I was born 9 months later.
Sorry, didn't mean to chuckle.
No, no, but it's like, just lie to my face, you know, because at least when I catch you in the lie, I know you lied, okay? Just lie to me. Just say, okay, you know what, Tracy, I'm lying to you. I am just lying that I'm saying that I am not going to cut, you know, taxes from the middle class. I'm not going to take away the tax credit for people sending their kids to college. I'm not going to take away the tax credit for owning your own home. I'm not going to do, you know, just say I'm going to do all this shit so I can be prepared. So when I bend over, at least I'll have some spit. I'm not asking for grief. I'm not even asking for a kiss, you know?
Right.
Just a little spit, okay? So at least I will be prepared for the ass screwing. I'm going to try to be not as vulgar as I know I can. And
we all know you're a lady, Tracy.
I can be, there are the tendencies for me to be a lady. For the reaming that this country is going to get if this man is elected into office. And like I said the last time I called, these little people running around with their little Romney stickers and all this with on their little scooters, and these people that I picked up with their Romney placards in their yards for access.
Oh, that's all there are in the yards around here.
Mm-hmm. I just laugh at these people. I feel bad for them because, see, all these benefits that you are getting, they're going to be, like you said, I love it, that word, niggardly.
Yeah, N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y.
Niggardly. They are going to snatch. They're going to do everything they can to take away what money is all in all these programs and make sure that there is nothing left while their homies are kicking it. Like you said, like the, you know, the lie about the bra burning and the, you know, the bankers, Wall Street bankers jumping out of their, you know, their offices, you know, during the great crash of 29 and all that. It's like the banksters now. They're not hurting. They're okay. It's just my friends and families that are upside down in their house, no. Or they just walked away from their home because of deceptive, you know, practices by the mortgage company. But nobody talks about that. You know, and it's just, you know, I still hold out hope that.
Yeah, and let's get one thing real clear, real quick, Tracy. Just as the Repiglicans ran in the 2010 midterms hollering about jobs, right? And then proceeded mm-hmm. to take power and do absolutely nothing about jobs.
You know, exactly.
They're still doing that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine a President Romney administration. And so we'll start asking, okay, it's January 21st, Willard, where are the jobs?
Where are the jobs?
And he'll say, well, you know, I inherited a real mess from, you know, that black man. That's what happens when you let one of them take hold of things.
Even though, you know, they tell us not to, they're telling us that it's not our fault.
And he will explain, and you know, they've criticized Obama for pointing out that he inherited a mess.
Right, exactly.
But the same excuse will be used for at least the first 3.5 years of the Raw Money administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like the same, you know how you would say, the hypocrite. It's as my grandma used to say, they're talking out of both sides of the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
The ones that, you know, when the jobs report, the one that came out, what was it last week or the week before? Well,
yeah, former GE chairman Jack Welch said, well, they just made it up, the gall of them.
Right. Now, how is it that same jobs report that was saying that, you know, unemployment was up? So you can't have it both ways. Because if that's the same jobs report that you're using to say that unemployment is up, so once it goes down, so it's a lie. So, but how is it a lie? So then that means the job report.
Right. But it's because they're psychopaths, sociopaths.
Sociopaths, psychopaths. You know, like you said the other day, sociopaths. They have to be sociopaths because they can lie on the spot and they don't give a damn. They know the difference between right and wrong.
They know the difference. They just don't care.
But they choose. They don't care. They don't care. And I keep holding out hope. I mean, you know, I might be going to Nevada this weekend to help, you know, because the early voting has already started there. to help, you know, do the phone calls and knocking on the doors. I just might do that because I'm not going to give up. I mean, I just, what tickles me is this, the debate that's happening today is full of people who are undecided. I guess they're going to be asking the question. How in the fuck at this point are you undecided?
Yes.
And that's my question. I mean, how are you?
Well, if they're all undecided voters, the first thing I'd like to see them, okay, everybody, tie your shoes.
Right.
Because, you know, raise your right hand.
How at this point can you possibly be undecided? Either is a yay.
Well, what demographic segment of the country would those undecided voters come from? They're not coming from the unemployed. They're not coming from the employed.
No.
How could you possibly be undecided? Somebody's lying.
Somebody is lying.
And that's because the for-profit media, who are deeply, you know, heavily invested in promoting these pageants, have a lot of money yet to make.
They have a shitload of money to make. I wish, you know, it just, whenever when I hear, like, Rush Limbaugh and those idiots talk about, you know, the liberal media, I wish the liberal media had as much power as they claim we do. I wish people like you and Malloy and Rachel, all these people, I wish you guys had the kind of pull that, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Glenn, I can't even say their names because it gets a horrible taste in my mouth.
Yeah, you know, Jim just pointed something out during our conversation that I think is very perceptive. He said Jack Welch attempting to degrade the figures by the Department of Labor is just another right wing assault upon a federal agency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the absolute truth. Yeah, that they'd like to get rid of.
Like the EPA. What I was loving was. That was about a year or two ago when they were talking about getting rid of the National Weather Bureau or whatever and using somebody else, but they would still have to use the statistics from the National Weather Bureau.
Yeah, that was Rick Santorum's doing a few years back because
one of his
patronage clients was AccuWeather of State College, Pennsylvania. Right.
Okay.
By the way, a couple of other emails coming in. Marty wants to know, what are you paying for a price for a gallon of gas, as he puts it, down there?
Okay, well, as a matter of fact, gas has finally gone back down. Shell regular gas in Sherman Oaks is $4.51 with Van Nuys, and I paid $4.41 because I have a Rouse card, which is like your Kroger card.
Right.
So I get an extra 10 cents off. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Yeah, boy. That's the good stuff. But $4.51 a gallon? I'll be damned.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, it was worse than that, sweetie. It had gotten up. It had gotten up to $4.79.
Okay, I will not piss and moan the next time I pay $3.90.
No, I will. I would give up something. I can't say on the air what I would give up, but just to see a three, anything.
It'll go back to 503.
Exactly. I mean, we got to the point.
Okay, yeah. Marty says he's doing 439 in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. It's cheaper up there. And so it's just, I kid you not, 2 weeks ago, because, you know, I drive a cab, and just so happens that I had like three trips out to Duarte. Actually, no, this was just last week. On Monday, the gas was $4.09. A gallon. On Wednesday, that Monday was $4.09. The following Wednesday was $4.19. The following Thursday was $4.39. And by Friday, it was $4.59. And that was at ARCO, which is like the, you know, bargain basement gas here.
Yeah.
In the course of not even a week, it had gone up 50 cents. But what tickles me, when it goes up, it jumps up like 10, 20, 30, 40 cents. But when it comes down, it goes down like 3 cents.
Yeah.
Did I just say 3 cents? I didn't. There was no T at the end of that, was there?
Hey, we had a note in from Philip a little bit ago. I mentioned those L.A. dreams that I have from time to time and can't explain. He said, sadly, your dream about Los Angeles is not good news, Bob. Were Carl Jung still alive, he would tell you that you simply and inexplicably want to exchange one type of pollution from coal for another from smog. I'd recommend dreaming. I'd recommend dreaming about a more healthy environment in this country, but the show will be over. For that matter, the week will be over by the time I think of one.
Well, see, the thing is now, the reason why our gas, you know, so they're saying, the reason why our gas is so high is because we have a special blend of gas for the summer. And I have to say, because I grew up here, I've lived in L.A. all my life, and I grew up in the 70s with, you know, when we see how ethyl and all that different horrible gas.
Right.
And our air quality was so bad, you could see the air. And in the last, I could say, 30 years, 40 years, our air quality is, like, right now I'm looking at the, I mean, there is smog, but nothing like it was when I was a kid. I have no asthma. I have no issues as far as respiratory problems. But as a kid, I had to stay in the house because the air was so bad. It was just God awful. But it has definitely improved. But as they were saying, it was a refinery problem, and I posted on my Facebook page. It's funny because how are you going to say it's a refinery problem when I know for a fact my aunt who works for a refinery out here, typically she's off for about a month or so, but she's usually back to work by September, no later than October. And this year, it's been the first time in 4 years, and the last time we had a gas issue was 4 years ago. And what was happening 4 years ago? We were having
an election, weren't we?
Uh-huh.
Now, those sweet little oil companies would never deliberately manipulate the price of gasoline to influence the outcome of an election. Now, dadgummit, this is not paranoid conspiracy theory radio. You just save that stuff for Alex Jones, Tracy, okay?
Well, see, the day before, President Obama, President, not Obama, not the other one, but President Obama and Mitt Romney's debate 2 weeks ago, that's when our gas prices really spiked, that particular day. In a state that is fiercely Democratic, in a state that basically is blue through and through. I mean, we had those pockets called Orange County and Kern County and, you know, up north with the meth, with the people with the meth labs and shit like that. You know, nothing about Davis or anything like that. I'm sorry. But this state is basically a blue state. President Obama has this state, pretty much, I pray. And like I said, that's why my mom is flying to North Carolina to vote. Because, like you said, I am not happy with our president, but, oh, my God, if Mitt Romney wins, I'm moving to Canada. Did you hear that JetBlue is offering to fly people out of the country if their candidate loses for the president?
No.
Did you hear about that? You didn't hear about that?
Yeah, if their candidate. So either way, they're playing both ends against the middle, hedging their bets and
hedging their bets. I mean, I'm voting up on my Spanish. I'm moving to Costa Rica. They have socialized medicine down there.
Well, you know what? I'm still harboring hopes. Back, it'll be 2 years in February, actually 2 years at the end of January, when the Lib boat docked at Grand Turk in the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Okay.
And I thought that place was wonderful, just beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't all, it wasn't completely touristed up. And I had done some reading before the trip and found out that at one point in time, the Canadian government had entertained the notion of perhaps inviting the Turks and Caicos to become part of Canada. And I'm just encouraging my Canadian listeners to contact their representatives
and see
if you can bring that back up. Get that back into the conversation.
Well, like I said,
because I would love to be a Canadian from the province of Turks and Caicos.
I'm right there with you. Well, it's like what I was saying about moving here to California. I mean, okay, yes, I'm on disability, and I'm eligible for Medi-Cal, but I didn't have to jump through a whole, you know, told them how much I have in the bank. I told them what I make, and guess what? I got Medi-Cal. It's gotten to the point now out here, Bob. I didn't know this because it's been years since I've had, you know, used Medi-Cal or anything like that. I've been eligible for it for years, but I didn't need it. I was on the, because like I said, my doctor bills were of the extent that I could afford to pay, you know, my 20% or whatever I was charged for my doctor's visits or my prescriptions. I was fine. It wasn't until I found that I was going to have to have brain surgery and was going to be in the hospital for God only knows how long. I mean, like I said, my surgery alone was going to be $150,000, and that was just for my surgeon. That wasn't the anesthesiologist. That wasn't all the other people running around the operating room getting ready to cut me open and making sure that I was still breathing and warm and all this. And that didn't count about the people who, once I got out of surgery, who cared for me and brought me that nasty food and, you know, washed my butt when I couldn't get up and all that. That doesn't count all those other people, you know? So only by the grace of God, and like I said, thank God for it, because I would probably, my percentage, I would probably be looking at $50,000 for that was supposed to come out of my pocket. And it tickles me when you, because I hadn't heard about Mitt Romney saying that, oh, well, the government's going to pay for it or the bullshit. Like you said, that would have been me trying to work, tired and all this, paying people off while I'm in this damn cab. So, no, there's nobody going to pay that bill but me. And like you said, nobody's going to pay the bill that you got but you. So,
exactly.
For them to say, for him, because see, he'll never have to worry about a bill. If him or if his, of his minions or his children or their children or his children's children or all these people get sick, they're going to have the bestest care. They're going to have the kind of care that you get the hospital wings named after you money.
What we identified as spaceship money.
Right. So when you look somebody, look directly in the camera and say, well, they don't have to worry. They just go to the hospital because the hospital or the government or somebody, they're going to pay the bill. You're not going to have to. Oh, really? Did you tell the collection agencies that when they called you about the money you owed them for your hospital, for you, when you went to the hospital? Did you tell him that Mitten said that you didn't have to pay that?
I was thinking of maybe doing that when we go in to talk about the surgery.
I think you should.
Yeah, that, you know what? We could just sort of update the whole, who was that crazy woman in Nevada who said take a chicken to the hospital? Willard loves West Virginia. He has coal on his wheeze. After all, it's not a hot drink. So maybe, you know, maybe I could take Willard to the hospital.
I think you should. I think you should call Mitten because he's so compassionate and he cares for others. I think you should call Mitten.
Yeah, but then he'd probably make Agnes have her parts put back in, and we'd have to make another baby, and then we'd have to give it up to be raised as a Mormon, and because he wanted that other woman to do that. That's just too much.
Well, it's like what you were saying, because as I was listening about the dead baptism.
Yeah, see, then, now, I understand Kate's position of, you know, who gives a damn? You know, when you're dead, you're dead. But,
right, but
it's gross. It's just gross.
And if you know, like you were saying, how they would corrupt history, like those fools in Texas. What are they calling the slave trade in the Texas textbooks?
I don't know. Human flesh entrepreneurialism?
Something. It was like, you know, because it was, you know, slavery was too liberal of a word.
Yeah.
So
damn that liberal language.
Damn that liberal language. But it's just when you think about the Mormon church, okay, and you think about the fact that up until 20 years ago, they wouldn't have let black people in. Or
well, did you know? I got a video here. I saved it. I got a video here from a Mormon elder that I'm kind of saving for tomorrow night, but I'm ruining it. From a Mormon elder from not that long back explaining that people of black skin are the agents of Satan on earth.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
How does it feel like get up in the morning and check the inbox to see if you got any instructions from the boss?
Well, see, remember when you
the one with the horn and tails and cloven hooves.
It's like when I see again black Republicans, black Mormons. I know what you people really feel about me. I know it.
You know what I saw today? I saw a story, and I'm not trying to just use shocking demographics or anything. I blew past it. I didn't even read it. So all I saw was what it was, a story about a black lesbian Romney voter.
Because my next thing was gay Republican. They hate you. Well, I guess they could say me now because... Well, I still haven't figured out if I'm gay or not. I have a wonderful girlfriend that I love. So, you know.
You know what? You're in love. I think maybe it's on us, Tracy, to advance the 21st century, kicking and screaming. Maybe one of the things we say in the 21st century is I have someone I love.
And who loves me.
Right. And everybody rejoice.
And everybody rejoice. And I have a two-income family because now I can contribute to the horn on a regular basis.
Bless
your
heart.
God bless America, and God bless the fact that I do live in a state, even though that we can't get married. I don't really want
to
get
again.
Married.
Thanks to those millions and millions of dollars pumped by the,
from the
Mormon Church and the American Family Association and the Roman Catholic Church into the hate campaign.
Thank you, religions of love and peace.
Thank you.
Love and peace and loving your fellow man and doing for the poor and taking care of others, doing unto others. Because, see, obviously these people, unless they're into being screwed up the yin-yang, I guess they are into do unto others as you want them to do unto you. So I guess everybody is just going to take it up the ass.
I mean, I've got a happy little story. When I got out of the ER the other night, and remember, this is West Virginia. This is one of the most bigoted states in the union. It just is. Mm-hmm. I'm not proud of it, but I got to live in reality land. When we got out of the hospital the other night, my blood sugar was on the way down. I mean, singing bass low.
Right.
And the sweat was popping out, and I was shaking and stuff like that. It's nasty. And so we popped into a local chain restaurant just to get a bowl of soup into me because there wasn't much I could eat at that point in time. There still isn't. And we sat down in a local chain restaurant, and a young man served us. And I was talking about how much I enjoyed what I had ordered, and he said, "My partner does too. He has it every time we come in here." And he walked away, and I went, "Honey, you realize what he just did? Do you realize how much he trusted us?
Trusted you to say that. And he shouldn't have to."
No, but he did in West Virginia. In a little bitty, hick, redneck, backwoods, coal-friendly, friend of coal, coal-loving, I mean... And...
Coal. And he said, "My partner."
And he used the pronoun "he." And we didn't turn green, we didn't turn blue, we didn't cross ourselves or cast out no demons or start speaking in tongues or nothing.
Your head didn't start turning around?
No, we smiled and talked about,
it's like my mom, like I said about my mom moving back here to California.
Right, but in that moment, Tracy, I realized that the 21st century, the one that we all dreamed about, we of a certain age, who were promised bases on the moon and stuff.
And fly. I'm waiting for my damn... I gave up on the 40 acres and the mule, okay?
Yeah.
Can I get my flying car now?
Right. And so that was one of those 21st century moments where you kind of look up and go, I take one of those Brother Albert stances and go... Yeah, there's evidence that we can be all right. And by the way, your fly. I tell you what, I don't have your flying car for you yet, but I do have a story from the New York Times from October 12th. Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know how you feel about jet skis.
My girlfriend likes them.
Okay, so dig this. Dig this. This thing is going to sell like freaking hotcakes in Hillbillyville.
Oh, no.
The new company is the Gibbs Quad Ski.
Oh, God.
This is so cool. This just tapped into my little consumer gene, and I just went, oh, I want one.
I want it. Okay.
This is a jet ski with wheels, and the wheels fold out, and it turns into a four-wheeler.
Oh. Honey Boo Boo's family's going to have one. You know they're going to be the spokespeople.
You're just hateful.
You know, because...
Oh, there'll be a product placement endorsement deal. Honey Boo Boo will be taking the pig for rides.
All the thing, and because you know they had. Did you see the episode? The clips when they were mud wrestling. They put the water. They turned the water on and slip and slide.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And put laundry soap, dishwashing liquid, and they had. So this is something you could do in the mud. Yeah. Because there's not much four-wheeling.
But, even in Honey Boo Boo, there's a little moment of hope. Because there was that clip where they got the new pet pig.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. And Honey Boo Boo said, somebody said, but it's a boy pig. And and Honey Boo Boo said, he can be a girl pig if he wants to.
There you go. Go ahead on, Honey Boo Boo. You know what?
We're going to find the 21st century if we just keep wandering around.
Well, it's like
even in Georgia.
My mother came back out here because she was having medical issues. And finally, she came back out here, and my doctor diagnosed it right away. And so she was saying, he was asking about the doctor that she saw, and my doctor, being who he is, asked her, so were they all white? And my mom's like, yeah. He's like, well, no wonder you didn't get better.
Man.
No wonder.
Okay, so we just took steps backwards toward the, 18th century.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, yeah, because she's a black woman, and obviously, she's
probably one. Hysterical. She's black and she's female.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably just hysterical.
Doesn't matter that she has a master's in theology and, blah, and a bachelor's in this and highly educated. She's my mother, so you can only imagine.
Yeah. The, the apple falleth not far from the tree.
Not at all. So, she's been in North Kakalaki for, I guess now, since 1999, 2000. And she's like, beautiful country, beautiful people for the most part. But
still too many idiots.
It's just too many. And she's like, I got to come home.
Oh, and by the way, Ron and Raleigh want you to know your flying car is ready. And sent me a link from Motherboard. Story, FAA approves sale of flying car.
But I'm not going to be able to afford it. See, the flying car that I want is the flying car for the people.
Right, the one George Jetson had.
Because everybody had a flying car with George Jetson. We went from Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble using their feet to go, and we go from there to George Jetson, in the flying car. And everybody had a flying car. So I want the flying car for the people.
Well, look. Not the flying car. Tracy, don't give up. It's not out of reach. I just read the story. You got that whole two-income thing going on for you now. The name of it is a terrafugia. Terrafugia. The company is made up of a bunch of graduates of MIT. Yeah, of course. Well, no, duh.
I'm mad that they weren't Caltech, but go ahead.
It's been approved for the. Well, you got to have goals. It's been approved for the consumer market. The name of the flying car is the Transition. It goes from being a car to a flying machine in just 30 seconds, It goes twice as fast as in the air as on the ground. And on the ground, it gets 30 miles a gallon. And in the air, it can cruise at 115 miles an hour for up to 450 miles. It runs on regular gasoline, and it's only $200,000. I want one. And I want a trailer hitch on it that I can pull my quad ski with.
But you can only pull the quad ski when you're on the ground, Bob. The quad ski is not approved for flying as of yet, right?
Right, right. No, we'll unhitch it before we take off.
I just want to make sure. Because there's just.
But then again, no, I think your criticism is well taken, and knowing me, I would forget to unhitch it.
Uh-huh. And see, there's just enough redneck. No, actually, there's just enough redneck in you. Not that you will forget to unhitch it.
Right. Yeah, no, honey, why can't I get the nose down?
Why can't I just...
Sweetheart, did you unhitch the quad ski? You know, that's how that works.
Because I love you. And I know you well enough to know there's just enough redneck in you.
Yes.
There's just enough ghetto in me that I still on occasion drink Kool-Aid. And it's called red Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
With
did I tell you a long time ago about the Kool-Aid pickles?
Kool-Aid sickles?
Pickles.
Did you say Kool-Aid pickles?
I said Kool-Aid pickles.
Yes. Well, no, you didn't, but I used to eat Kool-Aid pickles.
Blew my mind.
I used to take, not only did I eat Kool-Aid pickles, but I used to take a peppermint stick and put it in the Kool-Aid or a Jolly Rancher.
Well, now, I was introduced to this concept at a meeting down in Mississippi, and I just sat there with my mouth hanging open, catching flies, going, this is the most brilliant idea that has ever struck food. Why are these not on the grocery store shelves all over the country? And it was patiently explained to me how you take the pickles and, you know, you keep them in the jar, you pour off a little bit of the juice, you add in the dry powdered Kool-Aid mix that's already got the sugar in it. And you fill liquid to the top, put the cap back on, stick them in the fridge, forget they're there for a couple of weeks, and then you go to heaven when you open the jar again.
Like I said, there's just enough ghetto in me. I can appreciate. See, no matter where I wind up in this world, no matter how, if I ever become this famous, crazy black pundit who loves, you know what my dream is? I've had this has been like your recurring dream about Los Angeles.
Yeah.
My recurring dream is to become a very wealthy black lesbian liberal.
You know what? There are dreams and there are dreams and there are admirable dreams. Because, I mean, you know what? You've got a big chunk of that sorted out.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking, because, see, there's nothing scarier to conservative white folk than an educated black woman, and even more scarier is an educated black...
Well, and you know what? There's another reason beyond
with
the white...
Money.
There's another reason beyond the white folks. Mm-hmm. You know what I would love to see? I would love to see a debate between, say, Tracy and do you know who Mia Love is?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, so they invited her in to speak at the Republican National Clavern. She's a congressional candidate running against the only Democrat in the House of Representatives from Utah, and she's the mayor of some little burg in Utah, and she's a black Mormon.
Like Gladys Knight?
And she is the daughter of Haitian immigrants, no less.
Well, because of all those missionary things that
I'd love to see. I'd love to just set up podium, Tracy, Mia Love, and just turn you loose.
Mm-hmm. Because see, I'm a Christian. Oh yes, that's another thing.
Well, so she.
Well, but
you know, her Jesus is Satan's brother and is Elohim's sons. From the planet Kolob.
I can see the planet from here. And so that's what, you know, I'm in no shape, form, or fashion a political genius or anywhere near that. But I'm just a person who knows right from wrong. I'm a person who loves this country. I'm a person who loves the Americans. Not just the rich Americans, but all Americans, especially the ones that have no voice, because I'm one of those people with no voice, as far as a voice that can reach, you know, to the our elected officials. But there's a whole lot of more people like me, but they don't, they just kind of, like you said the other night, they just come home and try to keep their heads down so nothing will happen to them, so nobody will come after them, so nobody will point them, they point their fingers at them and say, it's one of them. I want this country to be what it was promised to, well, not so much to my forefathers and foremothers, but to the folks that wrote the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. I want that promise because this country has such great potential, regardless of the Ann Coulters and the Glenn Becks and the Paul Ryans and the Mitt Romney. I still have the faith and the belief that there's going to be enough of us to say, okay, yes, Obama screwed up. He wasn't this. He wasn't that. I keep hoping that he listens to Michelle more so than he listens to anybody else, because Michelle gets it. She does. And I keep hoping that, you know.
Or maybe Michelle. Let's add Michelle's mama into the mix.
See, I've been watching Mrs. Michelle's mama, and she. I would not want to cross that woman. First of all, she's from Chicago. That's it. I think if Michelle Obama's mother had a chance, she would cut somebody and watch them bleed.
Jesus, Tracy.
What?
Nothing. No. Just.
You know, I that's just me. Because, like I said, there's just enough ghetto in me that I don't carry a knife or a gun.
Yeah, I'm thinking Mrs. Robinson. That's her name, isn't it, Mrs. Robinson?
Yeah, I believe, yeah.
I'm thinking she was probably living in Chicago when Dr. King was in Chicago.
Yes, she was living in Chicago during the race riot and all that. So she, Mrs. Robinson ain't nobody.
She stood by a husband who got up and went to work every day, even though he was being destroyed by multiple sclerosis. Now, there is some starch in that backbone that Ann, I've got a real marriage, Romney can't even begin to approach.
Like I said, these people cannot wrap their heads around. People have, like I was telling, you know, and I've said it before, when I had Alex back in 1988, I worked two jobs. Not because I had to. Because I wanted to, because I wanted to buy a car. Whatever I wanted to buy, you worked a second job knowing that it was not a permanent situation. You worked there for 3, 4, 5, 6 months until you made what you wanted to make, and then you quit. It wasn't because you had to work 2 and 3 jobs, not to because you wanted to go on vacation, because you decided, okay, I want to go to Hawaii or wherever, and I'm going to work, or, you know, an extra job, or I want a car, or I want to move into another apartment, a different apartment or a house. You worked an extra job for that down payment or whatnot and so forth, and then you quit. Those options are no longer. First of all, you can't just to be able to find a job to quit. Let's go there. Unless you're going to go work at Walmart. I ain't working at Walmart. I am loath to go into a Walmart because I know what that those people stand for. So, no. I'll pay an extra $5-$10 for something before I shop.
Well, and if I haven't said it before, I am so proud of the people who had the courage to go on strike at Walmart.
Exactly. Knowing that it was, you know, knowing what they were up against, knowing that these people are union-busting capitalistic pigs who don't give a rat's ass about the people that work for them, who, if it wasn't for the people that work for them, they wouldn't have the millions and billions of dollars that they have. Oh, God, I'm on my soapbox. Let me breathe.
I understand. Hey, Tracy, I'm going to roll.
I know we got to go.
Yeah, I got to go. I'm going to try to get a couple more phone calls in here. But it has been a wonderful conversation, and thank you so much.
The letters coming and the money coming, And like I said, every time I try, every time I call, if, even if I don't get through, I'm on the phone. I'm gonna send you a little something, something.
Bless your heart, Tracy. Thank you so much.
I feel you guys are so important. So, hello to everybody in the chat room. Kisses to everybody, and let's keep on pushing, shall we?
Let's do. Thank you, Tracy. Have a wonderful evening.
You too, my love.
Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from the roads of L.A. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, this is Grant from Portland.
Well, hey, Grant, how you doing?
Pretty good. I was more reacting to Kate's call than anything else, but Tracy really is a hard one to follow. She pretty much says it all.
You hold your own, just fine, Grant. But I gotta admit, Kate and Tracy make a formidable team.
Indeed. Now, you know, Kate got me thinking about something. You know, there's a lot of things she was talking about as far as the atmospheric quality that we sort of labor under and with the sort of dark prognostications look forward. But what comes to mind in my mind is, you know, if the hell-bent sociopathic and crazy are just that way, to the point where, you know, the rest of us who have to breathe this stuff want to react in some way. I was thinking in terms of a Haber-Bosch sort of complex, almost like a re-terraforming factory in some way. You know how I think in terms of gears and levers and
right
tech and stuff, and that's kind of what came to mind. I mean, you know, it's sort of like a reverse Haber-Bosch kind of thing, where instead of, you know, making ammonium nitrate and things like that, we're basically filtering out in terraforming, you know, sort of cones. We're looking for, you know, okay, 79% nitrogen and 21% oxygen and then trace elements and that kind of thing. And we just spit that out, you know, at a nice, healthy 275 parts per million carbon dioxide. You know, that's what I'm thinking. You know, it's just one of my flights of fancy, but it's like, hey, I got nothing else. You know, when I come against,
well,
know,
no, what I think
mobs or massy energy or anybody else, you know, when they just insist upon spewing, you know, mercury and carbon dioxide and everything else in the fucking atmosphere, you know, there's not much else I sort of leap to mentally to try to correct their mess.
And I think what you're speaking to, Grant, is the fact that we have problems that are solvable.
Mm-hmm.
Where our insoluble problem, is it insoluble, unsolvable, I don't know, problem lies is not with the science. It's not with the technology or the application thereof. The biggest problem we have in this country today is the people who think there isn't a problem.
Yeah. Well, you know,
and the question then obtains, what do you do about them? Because they are the people who stand in front of solving the real problem.
I don't know. You know, in my darkest fantasies, I go back to Super Friends in the Hall of Justice. Remember that episode where they pumped a bunch of toxic gas into Union Carbide boardroom? I mean, you know, that's kind of shit. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the kind of shit that comes to mind. It's like, okay, you like breathing that shit? We don't. You know?
Yeah, you know? Welcome to our world. Now, I mean, it's like, for instance, there was this rather stunning story that I ran across late last night and sent it off to some of the new friends that I made over in Germany going, are you guys aware of this?
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons I went to Germany was to address the general meeting of Deutsche Bank, because they're a humongous financier of mountaintop removal.
Yeah, okay.
And I wanted to sort of add the authenticity of my poorly pronounced Guten Tag, mein Name ist Bob Kincaid sort of thing to the whole milieu. And they sat there and lied directly to our face. We do not do that. I'm from Switzerland. If we blew up mountains, I could not go home. Bullshit, you know? Don't pee down my leg and tell me it's raining.
If you're from Bavaria, it doesn't mean you're not a crook.
No, he was from Switzerland, and it was basically his big retirement party. But anyway, that's another story for another day.
I see.
But there was a story about a Deutsche Bank executive, and there's a video out there of him admitting to repeatedly, and this is, you know, this is Deutsche Bank, which has just lost money, lost value, of him repeatedly using bath salts. You know what those are, right? I mean, make you crazy, hallucinate your brains out, makes acid look like a walk in the park.
He uses this shit?
Yeah, and this is like the vice chairman of Deutsche Bank America or something.
Holy shit, at least he could have the decency to switch to heroin. Oh my God.
I mean, yeah, but if you're one of those, but the point is, Grant, if you're one of those massive investment bank sociopaths, you don't want to mellow out. You want to jack it up.
God.
I'm looking for this character's name.
And the board has not expelled this creep?
Okay, here it is. It's from Huffington Post. Brian Mulligan, Deutsche Bank executive, admits to using bath salts 20 times. There's audio and graphic video. The quote, my lawyer will probably kill me when I say this, but I went to a head shop and I bought some of that white lightning stuff. And the story reads, only time will tell whether this admission by Deutsche Bank Vice Chairman Brian Mulligan will be the unraveling of his $50 million lawsuit against the Los Angeles Police Department. He made the statement during a recorded conversation with a Glendale police officer just 2 days before his violent confrontation with LAPD officers, which is the basis of his suit.
I'm sorry, Bob. You know, this is like the captain of the Valdez having three martinis and slaloming icebergs.
He brings up his pot and Ambien use, saying that marijuana made him feel like his face was melting off, while Ambien made him feel like his mind had a cast over it.
It doesn't surprise me.
Throughout the entire conversation, the police officer remains calm, advising him to throw the bath salts away and return to his family and career. So, you know, here's one of these multimillionaire assholes who may, for all I know, be responsible for the decision-making that winds up pumping money into the abject destruction of my home. And it turns out he's just a mind-warped street punk, with all due apologies to punks, who generally behave better.
In a banker's chair, making decisions over the life and death of whole population.
Yeah, I think maybe tomorrow I'm going to try to remember to play the audio of this. Yeah, here's your high-flown economic experts hitting the head shop and buying some bath salts so that they can, you know, so that they can get in touch with their lizard brains. Jesus, you know? Hey, Grant, I'm going to try to wedge one more call in. It's awful good to hear from you, my friend.
Good to hear from you, too, man.
All right. Sure. Bye now.
Bye.
That's our buddy Grant calling from Oregon. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Huh. That must have been an inadvertent. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that, Grant. I thought we had another call, but I think I heard somebody at a cash register. But that does bring us to the end of the program this evening. Thank you so very much for joining in, for listening, sharing. I wish I could have been in the chat room with you this evening. I've gotten some great information about what may, I hope, sort out Java issues. Really appreciate that. Thanks to all of you for all that you do to keep this going. First and foremost, the very precious finite time you spend with us on any given evening. This is only a genial family conversation because the genial family is here to participate in it. Thank you. Thank you for keeping the lights on. Thank you for keeping the bills paid. However you contribute, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Shorty. Thank you, Sal, for tonight's $100 challenge. Thanks, Dr. John. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. They're amazing. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you, Texas Betsy, for always helping out. Texas Betsy is our blogger. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Agnes, who makes sure there's a show post every day. Thank you to John Fox down in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, for 10 years preserving liberal progressive radio on the Internet and doing it without ever having sent a bill. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, whereat you can order the coolest t-shirt in the world, Save the Endangered Hillbilly. Get one before they're gone. I saw the stack the other day, and there's just not a whole lot left. And, of course, ACACT, ACHEACT.org. With his $100 challenge tonight, Sal said, keep promoting the ACE Act. I think it's vital. And it is. Literally, the future of this region depends on that piece of legislation. If we can end mountaintop removal via the ACE Act, then Appalachia has a chance. And you are the critical component in that chance, because it will be your advocacy of the ACE Act with your elected member of the House of Representatives that will make the difference in the passage or failure of this historic bill. I've got a great conversation coming up with Peter B. Collins later this week on his podcast. Look for that. And thanks to Peter B. Collins, and thanks to Andy for making that happen. ACACT.org. You really can make more of a difference than you know. And when we get the ACE Act passed, you will know that you haven't just saved the environment. You will know that you have saved lives. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
My buddy Rick Smith is next on the Horn.